carbon is you.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
Sunday, July 16, 2023. This is your award-winning Kibble Nation Media Assassination, episode 1573.
This is No Agenda.
Not afraid of AI at all. And broadcasting live from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region number 6 in the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where it is actually National AI Appreciation Day. I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Craig Vaughn Buzzkill in the morning.
It is not.
It is.
Who is this by presidential proclamation?
Go to, what's it called?
Whitehouse.gov.
Nationalday.com has all the holidays, no. And today is the following.
National.
It's National Day. Corn Fritter Day.
Well, now stop the press. Okay.
National Ice Cream Day. National a Fresh Spinach Day.
Oh, man, of course.
Guinea Pig Appreciation Day.
Yes, okay.
National Cherry Day.
Cherry Day.
National Atomic Veterans Day.
Wait a minute. Who's a vet of atomic?
I don't know. Okay. It's probably just to plug the Oppenheimer movie.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Rural Transit Day. Feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, World Snake Day, and Artificial Intelligence Appreciation Day.
Well, I'm so happy we can celebrate that with an actor strike. Yay! Dude.
So.
Dude. Podcast is the future. These guys are never going to resolve this dispute, ever.
So I had a long chat with Brunetti. Our Hollywood producer.
Yes. A hot, big time, hot shot Hollywood producer.
Big shot.
House of Cards.
He's done everything except run a studio.
And who knows?
Hopefully he will.
Because that'll finally get you the bit part you've been looking for.
No, it won't.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a boots on the ground report straight from the top of the entertainment empire.
First of all, he goes off on the writers.
Yeah, in what way?
Writers, all they do is whine. He says, you can produce a movie that never shows the light of day and nobody gets paid except the writers.
Yeah, that's true.
There's always four writers because three of them couldn't do the job.
How many writers does it take to screw in a light bulb?
On and on about the writers. So he doesn't really care for the writers.
But wait a minute. The writers find themselves to be incredibly important. They create the IP.
And he says the AI thing is a straw man, bull crap. He says there's no way.
Yes.
That it's ever going to, your writers have all these, specific skills that really take a human. It's too fine tuned for AI to ever get into. But then he goes into the Screen Actors Guild where he signs this to be
SAG AFTRA. It's now combined.
Yes, SAG AFTRA.
Yes.
He goes after them, and he says that, for one thing, they've been using, using fakes situations in the background forever, and the idea that they're going to take every screen extra that comes in, they're going to take their picture, pay them for one shot, and then use them forever for free. He says they're missing the whole point of this. He says this is a kind of a buyer's market.
Slow down. Explain what that means. I understand it, but just explain what that means. Use them in the
idea
background.
Is the SAG after one of their complaints is they're worried sick that the extras, even though I thought that was the Screen Extras Guild, but okay, I guess they've joined forces. The extras are going to walk into the guys just sit around the background and sit at the tables. They're going to come in. They're going to 3D scan them, pay them for that one day's work, and then use an AI created background from then on. And they're never going to get paid residuals or nothing. They're going to get screwed.
Yeah.
Now, he came up with what I thought was one of the most brilliant things I've ever heard. I have to say. He says they're kind of missing the point. He says you could create at any studio a profit center using the following technique. Charge people $100 to come in with under the guise, do you want to be in a movie? They pay $100. You scan them, 3D scan them, put them in all these movies and say, you're going to be in a bunch of movies. We'll send you an email letting you know what movies you're going to be in for the next 10 movies.
And free tickets.
And, well, they don't even have to do that.
And popcorn.
Once he said that they would, for example, Adam Curry, you'd give him $100 for this service.
For the privilege.
For the privilege of being in these movies.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd get an email telling you when you were going to be in it. It would, people would line up by the thousands. You could set up a shop in Hollywood and just say, be in a movie and bring your $100 and here we go.
All right.
He's actually going to present this to a studio.
I think that's a dynamite idea. But this, of course, is not the problem at all. This has nothing to do with the core issue. And I have a couple of clips from around the globe. And I'm very, very, I can listen to Fran Drescher talk all day long.
I have one Fran Drescher.
I love Fran Drescher. I love hearing her talk. I love it when she's all riled up. She still looks amazingly good. How old? She's got to be in her 60s
she's
now.
She's 90, 93.
even without makeup. She's there without makeup. Pretty much, as far as I can tell, she looks great. I just love how how does she get that gig? Is that voted? Is that the members?
Yeah,
vote
it's a vote.
Prison?
You have to. This is a lot of work to get that gig.
Well, she's
You have to run. You know, it's a voted in thing. Yeah, Reagan was the last one who did this.
See, the real. I'll just say it up front. The problem is the movie business is now owned by the technology business. Big tech owns the movies, and it's turned from theaters. Yes, theaters still important, but we can see the writing on the wall. Theaters are moving into the home. Soon you'll sit in your tiny home. You've got your Apple Vision Pro, and you're enjoying
in your tiny home.
I'm
yeah.
telling you, this is the future. You'll be looking at this huge screen. You'll be enjoying. You can even enjoy it with friends, and you can look over and look in their so-called eyes. I mean, it's gonna be a great experience. But as we know, the model for Silicon Valley is. Give me all of your creative energy. Give me your identity, and I'll give you shit. That is that's the model. That's the Twitter model. That's the Facebook model. That's the Google model. Give me everything, including your actual identity, and I will give you nothing. So what we're doing, value for value, is the only way forward because people also can no longer afford to have all these different subscriptions. And guess what? Even though Fran doesn't want to believe it, the magic money machine is over. There's no more cheap free money. Everyone's losing their ass on streaming. Yeah, sure, Bob Iger's doing okay. Blah, blah, blah.
Huh. Yeah, a few CEOs are doing okay. Not to the extent of the clip I have of her. She claims they're making hundreds of millions of dollars a day.
Well, let me play a couple of clips here, and then we'll continue because I have a few more things to say about writers and actors. First, we go to CNN.
We're also happening this morning. TV and movie production brought to a grinding halt after the union representing 160,000 actors goes on strike. Members joining picket lines alongside writers who walked off the job in May. The issues that center around pay, streaming service residuals, but also things like technology, especially artificial intelligence. Hey, CNN contributor Sarah Fisher joins us live now. And Sarah, that's the thing that... of all the elements here, and they're all critical to the negotiations that are ongoing to the extent they are at this point, it's the AI issue and I think the central nature of it. What exactly are actors concerned about and how do they actually want it addressed?
It's a huge issue, Phil. So essentially what the studios are trying to say is that an actor or somebody who's working in the background, think about a stunt double, et cetera, could have their image be screened. And then anytime it's used after that, the studio would maintain the name, image, and likeness, meaning that they...
By the way, a stunt double, who of course looks like an existing actor, for the CNN news model to say, well, no, this is... They could take a stunt double and you could use them over... You are dumb, lady. You're dumb.
To benefit.
Hold on a second. I agree with that. But do you notice the use of name, image, and likeness, which is the term, this very specific term that was applied to college athletes?
Oh, good catch. Good catch. Yeah.
Because what happened in college athletics is that because of some lawsuits starting in California and other places, they started suing the NCAA because these poor kids were getting ripped off for their name, image, and likeness.
Well,
and they said, okay, now the student owns it so they can go sell their own name, image, and likeness. So there's something about that phrase showing up in this report, that right there is kind of a red flag.
Well, mind you, this is the news business, and if anyone is really afraid of being replaced by AI, it's the news models, because they know. They know that they are very...
Whatever happened to naked news, now that you mention
it? Still around. I think it's... What? Stop the press? Hold on. Let's go back. NakedNews.com. I believe it's still on the air. Let me see. NakedNews.com. Yes, it's still on the air, John.
Oh.
Yep. Welcome to Naked News. Yeah. Let's see. Cecilia is still on.
Unless they're getting clips from Naked News.
Marina Valmont and Frankie Kennedy all still on air. NakedNews.com.
Frankie!
Image be screened. And then anytime it's used after that, the studio would maintain the name, image, and likeness, meaning that they could benefit and monetize that person's, you know, image. But the person who is getting actually their image scanned would only get paid for that one day. So that's the big sticking point that the actors are very frustrated about. It's a huge issue, though, because AI is taking over every single industry, not just Hollywood, but the news media, all sorts of things. But within Hollywood itself, it's coming at a time where a lot of people feel as though they are not getting paid enough already. So the fact that they're not going to be able to make money off of their name, image, and likeness only after they do the scan is what's really this big sticking point is coming down to.
Man, her English is horrible. It's like she's a European speaking backwards, like just dumb. Anyway, from the SAG-AFTRA website itself, let me read this. What are the SAG-AFTRA strike demands? This is from their FAQ. The union is demanding increased minimum pay rates, increased streaming residuals, this is the key point, really, better working conditions, please, and a way to make royalties, be a podcaster if you want better working conditions, look at how what we go through, and a way to make royalties relevant once again. This is all about the royalties conversation. Now, here they throw in the red herring. Since the streaming model prioritizes, no, that's not the, this is the, one of the true problems. I'm sorry. Since the streaming model prioritizes shorter seasons over longer periods of time, the actors are running out of jobs and opportunities. Yes, this is part of the real problem. They plan to protest against that as well. Like the WGA strike, the Guild is also trying to focus on the artificial intelligence aspect of the whole ordeal. No, the problem here is there are too many actors and too many writers and not enough money to go around in the business. That's the core problem. It's market forces. We need less actors and less writers. I'm sorry.
That's why I think the idea of charging people to be
an
actor.
It's a great idea. Charge them to be a writer, too. Now, let's listen to BBC. We get some Fran Drescher.
Hollywood actors are going on strike over pay and the use of AI in the industry, leaving hundreds of productions in limbo. Hollywood writers walked out weeks ago, and now that members of the SAG-AFTRA union have joined them, it will bring the entire industry to its knees.
You know, before I continue this clip, it must irk some people who actually know what's going on that the news is only picking up on the AI aspect of it, because that's not what it is at all. They want actual residuals, which is over. Residuals are over. It's over. You get paid up front and that's it. It's over. That's not coming back. The model of, you know, of.
Well, it is if you're still working on Blue Bloods or.
John, it's obviously in the books. It's over. That's not the future anymore. And quite honestly, we have so much media, so much content out there in general.
Much.
Yeah, in general, it just has to shrink down. There have to be some losers.
The actor, comedian, and president of the Screen Actors Guild, Fran Drescher, is fuming.
Is she a comedian as well? Was she ever a comedian?
Was she when she was doing The Nanny? That's a comic role.
Okay, good point.
The entire business model has been changed by streaming, digital, AI. If we don't stand tall right now, we are all going to be in jeopardy of being replaced by machines. We are being victimized by a very greedy entity. I am shocked by the way the people that we have been in business with are treating us. I cannot believe it, how they plead that they're losing money left and right when giving hundreds of millions of dollars to their CEOs. It is disgusting. Shame on them.
Now, that's a true union voice. You know, that's she's borderline noodle boy. I can't believe that the CEO is making hundreds of millions of dollars and we make the product. We are the coffee shop.
Yeah, no, so it's
we are noodles. Right.
The workers control the means of production.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's all the unions do that. That's what they do.
Yeah. Well, but it's short-sighted because
worked in the past.
If I were, yeah, but that's over. These days are over. If I was Fran Drescher, I would say, you know what, we're going
to... I'd be surprised.
It would be interesting. I would say, look, all the technology is there. AI is at your fingertips. You can create entire screenplays together. You can do it as a group. We'll support you. We'll make sure that you have fair contracts amongst each other. We don't need the studios. Here, we got a server. Here's the SAG-AFTRA server. Go make your own stuff. Come on, movies are being made for $3 million. This is the mistake. And this is also a huge opportunity for non-union people to get together and do stuff. It's a huge opportunity. Well, there, because this will not be resolved. I don't see, I mean, this started with DVDs. And, you know, that was the first part of technology that really started to ruin this agreement.
Well, videotape, to be honest about it.
But DVDs made it so much easier. And what happened with DVDs is the studios, they got 75% off the top. And that was, you know, I don't know if Fran Drescher or was the one who was part of those negotiations, but that's where the mistake was made. So once you give 75% off the top and 25% is, you know, left to distribute to everybody else, I mean, okay, it's not going to be great. And she has to recognize that Disney is not just Disney Plus, that MGM is not, you know, it's not just, it's Amazon. You know, and Amazon is not just the movie arm. Apple is not just Apple Plus. So it's a little disingenuous to say these CEOs are making hundreds of millions of dollars. And I don't want actors and writers to be mad at me, but you have huge opportunities now, bigger than ever. Get off your ass and go do something. I mean it. Get off your
ass. You sound like you're running Paramount.
Maybe I am. Maybe no, but it's the market. There, people who think that there's plenty of money in streaming don't know what they're talking about. It's not working.
Money. They can't find a way to make money with streaming. It's always been that way. Anyone who's looked at the math of running these servers from the early days on. Yeah, at some point it scales when you get to some billions and billions of users.
Even then, it's sketchy at best. You know, stock prices based on.
Well, you know, you pointed this out in one of your. You gave a speech once where you made a big you made the point of that the difference between, you know, the computer based system is that the computer. You know, it sends out a single copy to a single person, and that's a one-to-one as opposed to broadcasting, like in radio, where there's an antenna that can provide the data to thousands and thousands
one
of people.
Many. With every extra customer, there's extra cost. It's not like broadcast where every extra customer decreases your cost. That's the point. Unless you use the M-bone, which... When's the last time we talked about the M-Bone? All right,
let's remember that. That was some scheme.
M-Bone was great.
It was a broadcast over the internet kind of idea.
Multicast over, and it was over T1
never
lines.
Flew.
You could do it today. Anyway, let's.
There's also the BitTorrent idea where you could broadcast using BitTorrent. Technology, so everyone was serving everyone else.
Well, if I may point out, noagendatube.com uses WebTorrent, and you can upload to noagendatube.com. In fact, our friend Mark Hall has done so. We've got a value for value model rocking and rolling on that, and every person who's watching passes on bits to the next person. And that's just one guy. Just, you know, Alex Gates runs that. You know, he's not rich. No, he just runs that, and it all kind of works. All of this can be done. All of this is possible, but people are stuck in the old model, and they're lazy. Hey, man, I just want my residuals. Well, yeah, that was okay in 1980. I know because I was part of MTV, the non-union shop. Do you think I get a single residual from MTV for anything ever? No. No way.
You're the future.
Tonight, for the first time in 63 years, both actors and writers will be on strike. Labor tensions now set to paralyze Hollywood.
LA is a union town!
SAG-AFTRA, the union representing actors, voting to hit the picket lines after negotiations with the organization that represents studios and streamers broke down early this morning. Actor Fran Drescher, best known for her role in The Nanny, now the president of SAG-AFTRA, saying they were given no choice.
You share the wealth because you cannot exist without us.
The more than 160,000 SAG-AFTRA members demanding better pay, regulations for artificial intelligence, and increased residuals, which for many members provides access to crucial health care.
$26,000 a year is what you have to make to get your health insurance, and there are a lot of people who residual payments are what carry them across that threshold.
The Association of Studios and Streamers said they offered the actors historic pay and residual increases and promises on protecting actors' digital likenesses from AI. But the union says that offer was not enough.
They came back with so little that I began to feel like we were duped.
What's your biggest concern right now?
Well, I feel, a big weight and responsibility that we had to strike. I hope that the opposition will come back to the table.
Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, the parent company of ABC News, today speaking on the side of the studios, saying the union's expectations are not realistic and could impact thousands.
There's huge collateral damage in the industry to people who are, who are support services. I could go on and on. It will affect the economy of, different regions even because of just the sheer size of the business. It's a shame. It is really a shame.
Learn to code. Listen. Actors and writers, now that the summer, it's going to be the summer of even less crap than we usually have. This is your tremendous opportunity. Take that script you've been sitting on that no one wants to do anything with. Get some of your actors. You can do a non-union, low budget. You can crowdfund. It's being done all over. You're watching the future. You're not even seeing the future pass you by. You get, a Mac. And you can do this yourself. You can have success. People will support you if you can make an outstanding product, which is the question. The opportunity is amazing to me. If I had any skills, I'd be doing it. No, this is what I do. I don't have any writing or acting skill. Although, come on, Swamp Thing. By the way, I don't get any residuals from Swamp Thing.
You were okay in that story that was that online thing with the detectives, whatever the hell it was. You were good in that.
Detectives? Oh, no, that was Swamp Thing.
No.
What are you talking about online thing with detectives? Who are you confusing me with?
It was some Mevio production or something.
Who do you think I am?
I don't know. I
online,
you probably forgot it. Just like
an acting gig in video, me. Was it the Amazing Adventures of Superhero Tourette's? DJ Tourette's? Was that what you're?
No, that's a good one though. Let's do it.
I don't recall anything like that, but I'm just saying that this is a golden opportunity to create something that people will support you. People love stuff like that. I mean, okay, I went to see Sound of Freedom yesterday. An excellent example. The movie was originally crowdfunded for, I think, $5 million. Not a lot, particularly if you have Jean-Paul DeJoria and Tony Robbins. People chucked in $1 million each here and there. And they got their money together because they had a good story. They had a good script. They attached a name to it. The lead actor, of course, because Disney just didn't see any way to make any money off it, didn't think it was going to be a hot ticket item, they just shelved it, which happens to all kinds of movies. I like the marketing angle of saying it's because of the elites, they don't want you to know.
Of course, that's what you do.
Which is great marketing. Having seen this movie, by the way, I'm now thinking that the AMC stories of pulling fire alarms, that to me is guerrilla marketing. Fantastic. There's no better idea than to make everybody think that the elites don't want you to know about the story, which was perfectly accentuated by the
N5M. I'm reminded of the marketing for what was that black and white? It was kind of a black and white film. They're moving out in the woods with a camera and they were finding ghosts.
Blair Witch Story.
The Blair Witch Project.
Blair Witch Project, yes. Great, great marketing.
Great marketing, phenomenal. Using the same style of guerrilla marketing.
Yeah. So I want to give a quick review and then explain what my feelings were after having seen this movie. We went to just north of San Antonio to watch this, not at an AMC movie theater, so the air conditioning worked. It was full, which was nice to see. And Indiana Mission Impossible, I think, was open in the same theater, but this theater was full. In general, 20 minutes too long. Very well done, very well acted, good story, you know, based on a true story. And if you've seen the documentary, then you'll know that it is based on a true story. And this guy is real. Tim Ballard really has saved children, has put pedophiles in jail. At no point is any child trafficked to the United States. There's no insinuation whatsoever of American elites other than some really, really messed up, drunken pedo sex tourism in Tijuana. There's no QAnon adjacent crap to any degree whatsoever. It would have been a great movie to watch at home on Netflix, honestly. Didn't necessarily have to see it in theater. There's a very beautiful plea at the end to raise awareness of this. And unless you are living under a rock, you know that sex trafficking is real. You don't really need to see this movie to believe that trafficking of children is real. I've been aware of this going back to the 80s in Europe, the Dutroux affair, the Rolodex files. Brussels is filled with all kinds of stories. Of course, that's where many elites are. Haiti, we know Hillary Clinton's buddy there, who's now in charge of Amber Alert, was illegally trafficking, 12 children across the border after the earthquake. I mean, there's example after example after example. So walking out of the theater, we looked at each other and went, yeah, it was a good movie, but this movie is, while to a degree as a parent, traumatizing, you know, where you take your kid to what you think is a show business audition, and you come back to collect your kids and the audition is gone, the sign on the door is gone, and your kids are gone. The only thing that is disturbing is the mainstream's response to it. Very disturbing, in fact. There is nothing that warrants what the Rolling Stone wrote, what the Guardian wrote, nothing that warrants the responses from CNN and MSNBC, other than A, they never saw the movie and they're just all jacked up because child traffic, they're the ones that have this QAnon thing in their head. Child trafficking, adrenochrome. They're so politically motivated that that's all they can think of, that that's the angle, that's the story. They can't even say something compassionate about children. Even if it was a made up story, you could still say, hey man, this really makes you think about what might be going on in the world. That's the disturbing part of this. The movie's not that disturbing. The concept is not eye opening. It is disturbing how the mainstream media responded to this. Purely political, trying to discredit anyone who even talks about it. That's the thing that is, it's harder for me to wrap my head around that than around the actual child trafficking itself. It's, these people are sick, truly, truly sick, that they can't even muster enough to say, hey, you know, that's kind of a problem. Let's get some experts in who know about this. And that used to happen.
Actually, that's a good point. Besides, I mean, I agree. Well, obviously, the show is about that in some ways, that the mainstream media is not only dropping the ball, but they're subversive. In a normal process, a movie like this would come out, and you're right, the mainstream CNN or MSNBC would bring someone on
to talk about
the problem.
Yes.
What as a concept. An expert. Yes, that's exactly what would happen.
What a crazy idea. But no, because a couple things. One, this movie did not follow the traditional Hollywood model of paying off, you know, premiums and junkets and everything for the news media.
Yeah, I think that's really the crux of it.
Of course, it's it must be a part of it. There's no advertising on the mainstream.
There's nothing on Entertainment Tonight. There's nothing on Extra.
In addition, I mean, it's crazy that these QAnon people are driving people to theaters to see this QAnon adjacent stupid movie while there's a perfectly good AI movie about the danger of AI, our main story from Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible, and Indiana Jones. How can this not be the blockbuster? This is wrong. QAnon, Trump. I mean, that's really how these people think. They're sick. As Voltaire says.
They are sick.
As Voltaire says.
They're misled. They're addled. I can't put my finger on it.
Remember, those who can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. That's who these people are. They will make you believe that this is a QAnon movie. It makes you wonder if they actually saw it at all.
No, they didn't obviously see it.
Well, I think they did. And I think they sit in the theater and they go, this is done by QAnon people. They're insinuating things that just aren't true. There's no such thing as adrenochrome, which I'm still pretty sketchy on, by the way.
Well, everybody is.
No.
It's funny. It's a punchline is what the idea is. Well, it's not really anything to take seriously.
That's how we use it, obviously.
It's a punchline. It's like Jon Stewart. And I think this punchline should be brought back. Jon Stewart, when he was running The Daily Show, he would go on and on about some operation or other. He said, and he'd always end it with a punchline, otherwise known as NAMBLA.
Oh, yeah. Well, NAMBLA is real. But NAMBLA is real.
Yeah, but NAMBLA's been out of the picture with all this trans stuff and everything. You think NAMBLA would be brought back into play?
No. Now, since you brought us here, we got a phenomenal email, which I want to share. Boots on the ground. And I have a couple of clips to go along with this, because this does play into what the mainstream is really up to. And don't look at child sex trafficking. Don't look at any of that. But, you know, let's make sure we don't offend anybody. Here's a very, very offensive bit on CNN.
They're not going to serve it because they don't like the way Dylan Mulvaney was treated after this whole controversy started. He, of course, is the transgender person they were going to sponsor and go along with Bud Light. They didn't like how Bud Light didn't stand by him after all this.
Now, did you catch the problem in this CNN clip?
But again,
okay.
If you'd prompted me to look for a problem,
I'm sorry. So this is they're talking about. Of course, Budweiser is a sponsor. There's a real problem. Budweiser is going out of the Budweiser Bud Light brand has very big financial troubles, perhaps much more. And Anheuser-Busch and CNN is discussing this, and they're of course defending. They're defending the brand. They're money masters, and they're saying, hey, you know, this the people were pissed off about Dylan Mulvaney.
They're not going to serve it because they don't like the way Dylan Mulvaney was treated after this whole controversy started. He, of course, is the transgender person they were going to sponsor and go along with Bud Light. They didn't like how Bud Light didn't stand by him after all this.
Now, did you find the problem?
Yeah, the him.
Yes, of course. It's misgendering. Hello.
Misgendered.
Hello, CNN.
We do want to make an important note. Yesterday in a segment about transgender influencer Dylan Mulvaney, who was featured in Bud Light's recent campaign, she was mistakenly referred to by the wrong pronoun. And CNN aims to honor...
Be quiet. You're stepping on all the good stuff.
She was mistakenly referred to by the wrong pronoun. And CNN aims to honor individuals' ways of identifying themselves. And we apologize for that error.
Yes, we apologize for that error.
I thought that Dylan Mulvaney was a they, them.
No. Dylan Mulvaney. Okay, so I have learned a lot in the past few days. And what I will not discuss here is the movie What is a Woman? It's a short documentary, about half an hour. It is not the Matt Walsh documentary. It is What is a Woman, comma, wrong answers only. And from this, you will learn that really this is the biggest misogynistic movement ever witnessed in history.
But we've been saying that on the show.
Yeah, but this really makes it come all. It brings it home, particularly people like Rachel Levine. This starts with young men who are missing a lot of things in their life. And let's face it, what men find attractive in women is a lot of stuff men have made up. The clothes that men perceive women to be sexy in, the lipstick, I mean, the high heels, all of this pretty much invented by men. So the ultimate turn on at some point for many men, young men in particular, but a lot of older men as well, is to become a woman, to be that sexy woman. It's weird to wrap your head around, but we got.
Well, there is a perversion.
Yes.
Where certain men get excited by dressing as women.
A lot of men, John. Not just certain.
Oh, I have a lot. Please.
Yes, 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 you have.
I don't know one of them. And I know more than 10 men.
Please watch that documentary. And I'm going to read this email, then play two clips that kind of play into it. How the system works. Because the internet is a very big part of this and big pharma medical community. So this is one of our producers, Anonymous, writes in. You received this well, and a very, I think, beautiful email. Thank you for writing this. I'm a 25-year-old trans woman, male to female, currently living in Portland, Oregon. I'd like to share information that you and John will hopefully find insightful. I started transitioning 3 years ago after a life of depression and self-exploration. I knew when I was around the age of 12, but it felt that coming out would ruin my chances at living a normal life. I have by no means been brainwashed by what has been and is currently happening. I have always been crawling the net and have been interested in computers for most of my life. So I found out about early forms of sissy hypno. We talked about this. This is the online porn that it's kind of an overreaching category. But it's everywhere, and it is about forced feminization, men becoming women in pornographic settings, and learned about early forms of sissy hypno from being in trans spaces all the way back to 2013. I'm happy you've been covering it on the show because it's a major problem now. So this is this is coming from someone who has gone through some of this, but is worried about what's happening now. Born out of the depths of fetishes like femdom, female domination over a man, and forced feminization, a woman making a man wear makeup and women's clothing. By the way, go on Pornhub. There's 15 of these categories about just this. Sissy has turned into a new age and destructive rebirth of the term crossdresser. Remember that, John? Crossdresser? There a lot of men were crossdressing back in the day. The porn
Not
has,
that many.
Yeah, more than you think, obviously. The porn has permeated parts of Reddit and all the major porn sites. TikTok has a huge role in this because a lot of TikTok-inspired hypno videos have started to sweep the main sites that host this type of content. The main one I've followed is hypnotube.com. Don't go look at that. Created by a trans woman who goes by Mia Electra. Her and the people adjacent to her circles are trying to cover all the bases by having marketed online storefronts like hypnofem.club, even creating fake fantasy pages like hypnouniversity.net. Go look at that one. The thing that I'd really like to drive home is that Discord, Twitch, anime, YouTube, and gaming culture all collide with this. Discord is full of groomers soliciting nudes, sending hormones to minors through the mail. Twitch is full of degenerates who play games for 12 hours a day that are slowly taking the roles of friends and parental figures to their viewers as a parasocial relationship. A lot of anime is porn adjacent. YouTube is the new TV for Gen Z, acting as a hub that links to games, that link to Discord servers, that link to Twitch streamers, that lead to being involved in ridiculous internet communities. An example, Finster. A British Twitch streamer that started out playing Minecraft and now has gained massive popularity for losing a bet to a friend where he had to jokingly dress up as a girl and go on Omegle, I don't know what that is, in 2018. He has now continued to be a girl for 5 years because of the money and notoriety he started receiving, and has recently created an OnlyFans where he labels himself as a femboy. It's a lot like the Dylan Mulvaney, like, I'm a failed actor, but if I pretend to be a girl, I'm famous, I'm making millions of dollars.
Yeah.
These are the influences that are...
Well, you would do that. Yes. It makes sense.
Yes, but these are the influences that are weighing on young kids now. It makes all of this seem very normal. Yes, I've been watching this slowly happen my whole life. Young men like my past self and friends around me being raised on a steady diet of video games, porn, fast food, no real purpose in life, no father figures, or any hope for the future gives you exactly what you're seeing. I hope this sheds more light on the topic from an insider's perspective. I will continue to be a mole in plain sight for all the dames and knights. So this story really made me understand what is happening. And this is from male to female. The girls is a different story. But here now we have the Witch Trials of J.K. Rowling, which is a very interesting podcast. J.K. Rowling, of course, the Harry Potter author who was very much against the trans Maoist culture and movement. And this podcast...
And condemned by
this podcast.
By a lot of people.
Yeah.
As a horrible turf.
Yeah. So when you have this going on the internet, parental type figures who are very popular on Twitch and they're normalizing it. And oh, it's great. You have Dylan Mulvaney. It's great to be a girl and I can be so successful. I finally feel like myself. You see people who are looking to be loved, particularly young children. And now all of a sudden, if I do this, I'm like this, I can be loved. And it plays into an already existing fetish, which I guess is just inside a lot of men anyway. This is the story of Noah, who became Natalie. And I pulled two clips. At 14, Noah was not feeling very good in Noah's skin, because that's what happens when you're 14. It is. I went through it.
Yeah, you
went
through 14. You're a gawky dweeb. Yes.
Yeah, you're not right in your skin. You know, you might get pestered for how you look or whatever's going on. And this is when, of course, you need parents and parental figures the most. But the internet was there to take Noah down a different path. And it started with an unlikely website.
And then when I was in middle school, I started discovering portions of the internet where people would talk about queer identity issues.
Notice queer identity issues. Okay. So these are the creeps out there pushing the queer ideology.
What specifically were you looking at?
My sort of gateway was BuzzFeed, because they have a ton of viral content.
Dear BuzzFeed, when I was 4, I just thought I was like any other boy. As I grew a little older, I started realizing I was different.
Jamie Dodger, whose video, it was titled Dear BuzzFeed or something similar.
I tried to fit in as female during my early teens. I could never find clothes I liked, felt uncomfortable in anything I wore, and disliked my hair being long.
I must have watched that 20 times. From BuzzFeed, I started doing my own research. When I was 11, I used to just rewatch videos over and over of trans men documenting their journeys online. And even before I understood why, I was fascinated with that content. That's just all I would do, is just rewatch videos like that. None of it was, you should be trans. It was just, this is my journey. This is what I want to tell the world about my journey and about the community at large.
Today, I'm going to be going over my 1 month post-op top surgery, kind of a general overview.
And I took all of that information in, and I came to the conclusion I should allow myself to explore who I am and try and use that as an avenue to find happiness. And something that had a really, really significant impact on me was people who portrayed a trans body in whatever forms it came in as beautiful or normal, which taught me that there is hope for me to be happy and that I can allow myself to feel joy or find some joy in how I look.
This is so understandable. You could, if it was be a giraffe videos, it might have made, or be a furry or whatever. That when you are an unhappy child and you don't have your parents are not, you know, you don't have parents, or you're missing a father figure in this case, or whatever it is, and you're allowed to be on screens all day long. Your parents don't understand it. And then you have parental type figures coming in and saying, hey, I was like you, and now I feel good. Look at me, and I'm beautiful. And you get comments like, slay, queen. No wonder these 11-year-old child is going to be very susceptible to that. Enter the medical community, because was this child really confused about his gender, or was it perhaps some other things going on? And how did the medical and pharmaceutical community play into it?
And were you seeing a therapist or a counselor at that time, like when all of this started?
I had a lot of mental issues. Maybe that's not the most delicate way to say that, but I was dealing with a lot of mental struggles once puberty began.
You mean aside from your issues with gender?
Yeah, and I couldn't really identify that I had issues with gender. I just had all of these abstract feelings that didn't coalesce into gender dysphoria until I understood what that term meant fully, which was later on in my life. And so I was dealing with very severe anxiety disorder, a depressive disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, and attention deficit hyperactive disorder. And so my mom got me a therapist who I've been with ever since. And when she picked out that therapist, she picked out someone who specialized in anxiety and gender issues in adolescence, which I find interesting to look back on. And I had a psychiatrist as well. And around eighth grade, I went into this really severe depressive episode, and I ended up telling my psychiatrist that I was debating suicide. And so everyone decided that we were going to have to like keep an eye on me. And so I just kept going to therapy. And like I said, the core issue, which we couldn't figure out, was never resolved.
Do you see what is happening here? Here's a child who's being diagnosed with anything but gender dysphoria, but get him the right therapist. Oh, you should be a girl. That'll make you happy.
And I believe within a year.
It's an industrial complex.
It is a total industrial complex, and it has a revenue model.
That's the key.
Yes, there's websites that charge money. There's OnlyFans. There's products. Lots and lots of. There's masks. There's full body suits. There's all. This is an entire industry that is being created. And the media, the same people who are not interested in child sex trafficking, they're promoting this.
And I believe within a year, I joined a support group for transgender youth, and my therapist helped me identify that a lot of what I had been expressing to her for a really long time could be identified as feelings of gender dysphoria. And after at least a year and a half or 2 years of those issues being present, she referred me to a gender clinician, and talking to my parents was the first big step that was taken. We identified what I wanted from the gender clinic, which was to go on testosterone and to get top surgery, but that couldn't happen partially because I was too young. I believe the limit was 16 for surgery, and they just weren't comfortable at 14. So,
I don't even know if this is a boy or a girl. I'm so confused about this story.
Our task that we got was for me to discuss my gender with my parents. And so once or twice a week for a long time, at least a year, my parents would sit down with me and we would have a long talk about how I was feeling, because it had to become very clear that not only was my gender dysphoria spawning all of the other mental issues I was having, but...
Oh, see, now we get to the crux of it. All these other issues you had is because you have gender dysphoria. Man, you can convince people to shock somebody. You've seen the shock experiment. Oh, don't worry, it's fine. And people just shock someone, keep shocking
them. Give them a good jolt.
Give them more jolts. You can convince. This is MK Ultra at mass scale.
That the solution was medical intervention, and that was seemingly the only thing that could help me, because we had tried pretty much every other option at that point.
This is a very, very, very troubling time we're in. What is happening here is the medical industry is playing into this for money. All of these websites, the internet has screwed up a lot. This is bigger than I thought it was. And the media,
the internet should have been shut down years ago. I've always said that. The internet is the problem.
It is. It is a we still have tailbones where there's no reason we should be able to handle this, and we can't. And so when you see a parent with a kid in the stroller on a screen, you know that that's probably not going to end well, because there's a lot of ghouls out there just waiting to pick this kid up for something, whatever their agenda is. And I think that we are in a mass MK Ultra state. And Kamala Harris is probably a victim with her crazy laugh. So
the rumor is now, according to some people, that it was her coke.
It was her coke, yeah.
Now, since you brought this up, this is kind of a universal problem. It's showing up elsewhere, but in different ways, and not quite the way it's showing up here. But there's something going on. It is an undercurrent. And, of course, the only commonality here, again, is the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, I'm referring to the For No Youth movement in China.
I'm not familiar with this.
Yeah, it's something I wasn't familiar with either. For no, no dating, no marriage, no children, no home.
That's the four. That's the four. Wow.
And it's a bunch of Chinese, as JC, I think correctly asserted, these are Chinese incels.
Okay.
And the whole incel thing has to be
part of this. Incel is
put
all,
into this yeah, giant problem. Yeah. But in China, and there's a very good YouTube video on this, and you just go to wheelchairs in China, and it's like the top video they show. Because in one of the provinces, they've banned electric bikes and just pretty much electric anything. The scooters are illegal, and they fine you a lot of money if you're driving around. They want you to be in cars or walking. But it turns out there's a loophole. You can go around in a high-speed wheelchair. And so now there's thousands of kids in wheelchairs driving around the cities of these areas to go to work, because the wheelchair... Some of these wheelchairs have a pretty decent speed and have a range of about 25 kilometers. So this wheelchair story...
And they're also certified by the FAA to fly, I think.
This story morphed into a little discussion of the For No Youth. But this is... the clip is For No Youth and Wheelchairs.
Think about it. If everyone chooses to travel by electric wheelchair, it's not the young people who are sick, but the whole society is sick. Won't it be a sad thing for society? Indeed, this is a helpless choice for young people in China. In Guangzhou, for example, a document has been circulating online, entitled, "The Current Phenomena of For No Youth in Our City Has Risen," and it's recommended that multiple measures be taken to strengthen the construction of youth development-oriented city. The document was allegedly issued by the Guangzhou Municipal Committee of the Communist Youth League of the CCP. The document claimed, "Following involution and lie flat and other phrases that describe the frustration of youth due to a variety of social pressures and the emergence of a culture of emotional psychology and behavioral styles, the topic of For No Youth is gradually spreading online and has become a new buzzword. That is, no dating, no marriage, no home, no children." The phrase For No Youth gradually spread online and became a new buzzword. The Guangzhou Municipal Committee of the Communist Youth League carried out a special survey on the development of youth in Guangzhou and recovered 15,501 valid questionnaires. Among them, more than 1,200 were college students and working youths who conformed to the characteristics of the For No.
AI is going to kill this show, I'll tell you that right now. What
guy's actually credited as a voiceover, and I've heard that voice in China.
That's a real dude, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
What are those four no's again?
No dating.
No dating. Yeah.
No children, no home, no marriage.
Okay. Sounds like fun.
Sounds like fun. They also are part of this thing. They said the lie flats, and there was some other thing, which was another kind of a youth movement that was going on.
These are all youth movements by children who have really been abused by neglect. Neglect.
You know, when I was a kid.
Yes.
We, besides the fact that we had long recesses and a lot of sports and a lot of PE, whether you liked it or not.
Forced physical and education.
And we had a community center where there were dances like all, every Friday and Saturday.
Dances, yeah, like Footloose.
There's no dances anymore. There used to be sock hops at the in the gym at least once every month or every couple of weeks.
Dance classes. Everyone would go to dance class.
When I was in the fifth grade, they taught us all the dances, cha-cha-cha, mambo, you name it.
I'll bet you can cut a rug, John C. Dvorak.
Give me some scissors. I can. There are all these activities to keep kids busy and socializing.
Yeah.
I don't know that they exist anymore. In fact, this little middle school over here where they had a giant playground, the playground's been turned into a parking lot. And there's still a baseball field out back there. But what happened to the basketball courts?
We had Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, and they were separate.
Yeah, I was in the Boy Scouts, and there was also the Cub Scouts.
Sea Scouts.
And something the girls had.
I was in the Brownies.
The Brownies.
Mm-hmm. We had white Indian busy, guys.
But they've destroyed those by, claiming. I was in the Boy Scouts for quite a while. I never ran into a pedophile. I wouldn't have known, I guess, if I had. But there was things to do. And there was lots of events that were oriented for kids. It was for the kids. The dances at the community center weren't for adults. It was for a bunch of teenagers. One of the record spinners.
We went out and we had rock fights. We throw rocks until someone get hit in the head and like, oh crap, the guy's bleeding. All right, end of rock fight. We hit a ball around. All right, let me hit clip two here of this no youth.
The document emphasizes that the for no phenomena should be transformed into for wants, i.e. want to date, want to get married, want to buy a home, and want to have children. These for no's are also known as the four emptinesses on the Chinese internet. The four emptinesses was originally a term from ancient cultivation culture in China, referring to the need to eliminate the four attachments to fame, profit, anger, and lust. Usually, it is a term to describe the life and mental state of monks and nuns in temples. Nowadays, young Chinese people, whether you like it or not, have chosen to move closer to the state of the four emptinesses. According to the current trend, young people don't need to buy cars and electric bicycles. Instead, they can just buy electric wheelchairs. The future looks great for young people who get into wheelchairs in advance. To borrow the title of a Chinese media report, young people driving electric wheelchairs now is to save them 30 years of detours. The CCP may not have imagined that such a bizarre scenario would happen under its rule.
I don't care what you say, that's an AI voice. That guy that's not a real guy. That may be his voice, maybe sampled or something, but that's
okay. I don't care what it is, AI voice or not, it's the report.
So we have all of these behavioral issues, including a generation which is very egotistical. They only think of themselves. Even our girls who are kind of, they're not Zers, but some of them are close.
They're not what?
Gen Zers. They're close.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Zers.
Zoomers.
But here in the United States, we may not have the four no's yet, but we have something new.
Loud quitting. That's the trend now working overtime, with employees becoming openly unhappy on the job. And Alexis Christophorus is here with the details. Good morning again, Alexis.
Good morning, Gio. Forget about quiet quitting. Now, frustrated employees are loud quitting. Instead of just doing the bare minimum and silently checking out of their jobs, loud quitters actively disengaging in the workplace, and they're not afraid to show it. New Gallup poll finds about 1 in 5 workers are loudly tossing in the towel. And it goes beyond being unhappy on the job. It's about being stressed out and fed up. Loud quitters are resentful that their needs aren't being met and they're acting out, doing things like sending disruptive emails, making inappropriate outbursts at work, undermining their company's goals, and bad-mouthing their boss on social media. The poll finds loud quitting is not something management can afford to ignore. Disengaged workers can be bad for company morale, and cost the global economy $8.8 trillion. Employees revealing they value talking openly with their manager, having more control over their daily responsibilities, and having a fair shot at being promoted. Experts say leaders should check in with employees regularly, help them find purpose in their work, and make them feel valued and connected to their team. As for workers, experts say before you loud or quiet quit, take a beat, decide what you really want from that next opportunity, and make sure you're running towards the next job instead of running away from the current one.
This is a broken generation.
There are a lot of TikTok videos of these loud quitters.
Yeah, and
I'm sorry, I didn't.
You need to bring them.
I think I did a couple of shows back, but I'll get some more of them. I don't understand it. It's like mostly women, and they scream and moan and groan about their company, and they're making a big fuss on Twitter. On TikTok, and it's like, why are you doing this? I mean, what is the point? What are you trying to accomplish? What does this prove?
This can only be children who live with their parents, or their parents are backstopping, because that's another thing that my generation is doing a very poor job of. Hey, sit on it. Remember, wasn't that a 50s thing? Sit on it, Fonzie. You created this. You figure it out. It's your problem. I'm not gonna help you out. I'm not gonna pay your rent. I'm not gonna while you figure out your life by being a douche at work. Our fault. And then let's just add, you know, we already know all the drugs that the kids are on, they're all on it because, the science says ADHD, ADD, depression. And now let's just add the food. And we have been tracking on this show one ingredient in food for many years. It goes back to when the CEO of the company that made the product at the time entered government, and the product had been rejected by the Food and Drug Administration time after time after time. But once that CEO, Donald Rumsfeld, got into government, aspartame was approved. And we have discussed the drawbacks of aspartame on No Agenda for years. In fact, we got tired of it after a while. Hey, you know, drink your aspartame. And so now we have.
You're right. We burned that one out like a decade ago.
I was so tired of talking about it. Like, yeah, it's cancerous, but there's
lot of Rumsfeld,
A lot of other things, that aspartame can do to you. And it's probably doing a lot to kids' brains. But anyway, it's hot in the news today. So let's run the stories.
Tonight, the World Health Organization just out with a new report involving the popular artificial sweetener aspartame found in Diet Coke, other diet drinks.
What is popular? Is there anyone who's like, ooh, it has aspartame. I'm going to have this drink because I like aspartame. Is that what it means to be popular? What do you think?
I think
that's
he's using the word popular correctly in that it's used a lot.
Okay.
Near aspartame found in Diet Coke, other diet drinks, gum, and other products. Late today, the World Health Organization's International Agency for Cancer Research classifying aspartame as a possible carcinogen,
possible,
but saying evidence is limited and limited. More research is needed.
Ooh, yeah.
After reviewing the data, the FDA in this country saying it disagrees, insisting FDA scientists do not have safety concerns.
It's safe and effective.
There is some concern that all of this data could confuse consumers, so of course we'll stay on it. Medical experts do agree on one thing, and that is more study is needed.
This is the interesting commonality. It may confuse consumers. So that's what the news is telling us. This may confuse consumer FDA. You know, this World Health Organization, you're confusing consumers, not people who want to know about their health, consumers. Don't confuse consumers. We need them to consume our product. Let's bring in Dr. Jen Ashton.
Okay, we are back now with our GMA cover story and a new report about the popular artificial...
Popular, there it is. It's popular. They're reading from a press release.
Sweetener, aspartame, and cancer risk. Our chief medical correspondent, Dr. Jennifer Ashton...
I'd love to be a chief medical correspondent. Doesn't that sound... Our chief podcast correspondent, that makes it sound like such... Like, she's real... Oh, yeah, she's probably official. She may have a uniform. She should actually come to work in a uniform.
Cancer risk. Our chief medical correspondent, Dr. Jennifer Ashton, is here with a reality check. Great to see you.
This is
getting so much attention, especially from diet soda drinkers. Can you break this down for us?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, aspartame, it's been around since the 1980s. It's in diet soda, beverages, chewing gum. It's in a lot of things as an artificial sweetener. The bottom line, based on this newly reported study that came out yesterday from the World Health Organization, for the average person consuming an average amount of this ingredient, nothing needs to change. But take a look at this list, because there are numerous professional organizations that have weighed in on this, some finding different, you know, bottom lines than others. The IARC, which is the research arm of the World Health Organization, saying it might be a possible carcinogen causing cancer. That's their second lowest, by the way, of designation.
By the way, that's their second lowest. I mean, it's just like climate change. Possibly, could be, might be, you know, it could kind of happen, but it's low. I hope it doesn't confuse consumers.
The FDA saying they do not have safety concerns. The World Health Organization saying it's safe. So they all kind of need to get on the same page. There's a lot of controversy there. There's a lot of qualifying remarks. Maybe, potential, possibility, needs more research, will continue to be monitored. But for right now, nothing needs to change unless you are consuming massive
amounts. Well, how much? What are we talking about?
Well, what they said is they're giving a dose and a calculation, kind of. For the average risk, for the average weight person, 40 milligrams per kilogram of body weight per day. What does that translate into? 9 to 14 cans of 12-ounce cans of soda for the average size adult weighing 140 pounds. You guys, that's a lot. That's a lot of soda, and that's a lot of aspartame. But it comes down to this basic premise and principle in toxicology, which is dose and frequency. Anything can be toxic if you take it enough in a higher dose.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Jen. I feel so much better about giving my child aspartame. By the way, 9 cans of soda a day? I think there's a lot of people who drink that much. But that's not the definitive number. CNN has different data.
World Health Organization has determined that one of the most commonly used artificial sweeteners, aspartame, should be put in what it describes as the, quote, possibly carcinogenic to humans category. Aspartame is, of course, found in many products, ranging from sugar-free gum to diet sodas. A can of diet soda can typically have about 100 milligrams of aspartame. There we go. Can diet soda of aspartame. And under the WHO guidelines, someone weighing 184 pounds could safely drink up to 33 cans of diet soda a day before breaking the safety threshold. Like a bad idea. That's a lot. You can count them. So CNN medical correspondent Meg Terrell is going to tell us, should you be drinking 30? No. Can we have a reality check here? I mean, we saw actually
reality check.
You realize how much would be necessary to hit the threshold. Do people need to be changing?
Listen, people, the sponsors have called. We need to attack this head on. We need to tell everybody that unless you're a crazy person and drinking so much of this stuff, you have nothing to worry about.
How much aspartame they're consuming based on what was released yesterday.
Yeah, Phil. So not based on this. That is from the WHO itself, actually. And so aspartame, of course, we know, very common sweetener used in thousands of different products, from diet sodas like the 33 you just saw on the screen, things like tabletop sweeteners, breakfast cereal, chewing gum, even, you know, medicines like cough drops or chewable vitamins. So this is in a lot of different things. And so the WHO took a look at this. This has been a decades-long sort of project that scientists have been looking
at. Why is she laughing?
WHO took a look at this. This has been a decades-long sort of project that scientists have been looking at. And what Dr. Francesco Branca, the director of the Department of Nutrition and Food Safety at the WHO, said about this review is that, quote, while safety is not a major concern at the doses which are commonly used, potential effects have been described that need to be investigated by more and better studies.
We've heard a lot of these types of scare stories that are meant to, you know, get you off of eggs because they want you eating something else, or get you off of beef because the chicken industry wants you to eat chicken. This is new. This is a clearly not a good product. But, you know, only if you drink a lot of it, only if you consume a lot of it. Is it cumulative? If you take the cough drops and the vitamins and the Coca-Cola and the toothpaste and everything, does it add up? I mean, I haven't, Dr. Jen didn't tell me about that. These people are ghouls. 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 And then, if
that
was
the theme for today's show,
if that wasn't crazy enough, now we're marketing a product developed in 1966 in Germany, and we're just slapping a new name on it. It's generic, as far as I know, and it's the biggest news ever.
FDA scientists do not have safety concerns. There is some concern that all of this data could confuse consumers, so of course we'll stay on it. Medical experts do agree on one thing, and that is more study is needed. That major change here in the U.S. in reproductive health care affecting millions of women in this country, the FDA approving Opill, the first over-the-counter birth control pill. It will likely be available in drugstores, convenience stores, online, without a doctor's prescription early next year. The decision significantly expanding access to birth control for women of all ages and comes amid heated debate about the availability of contraception and abortion rights following the Supreme Court's ruling overturning Roe.
So you heard how they went from one into the other. This is Norgestrel, or Norgestrel, however you pronounce it. Developed in 1966, it's been approved in the United States for years and years and years. Now, of course, it's, I guess the birth control pill used to be something that was prescribed by your doctor in consultation with your parents. And, you know, it's like, I think little Tammy should be on the pill. Well, yes, you know, she's going off to college and going into high school. You know, never know what could happen. So now it's just over the counter, but they're marketing it as something completely new, FDA approved.
When the pill called Opill hits drugstore shelves, women will be able to access hormonal contraception without needing to visit a doctor for a prescription. The FDA approval comes amid renewed legal fights over women's reproductive rights, specifically the agency's authority to approve the common medication abortion pill Mifepristone. NBC News correspondent Ann Thompson has more on this news of the over-the-counter pill. And Ann, I got to ask first, one pill does not fit all women here. So this is one pill. How soon before, you know, because different.
Do you think he's reading a script? One pill. It's one pill. It's one pill. It's just one pill. One pill.
Different pills work better for women, depending. When will we start to see a variety of this on the shelves?
That's what advocates hope that we will see eventually. This is just the first contraceptive that we will see on an over-the-counter basis, Chuck. But the key here, really, the issue driving this is all about access. And the belief is that this pill called Opill, which is a mini pill, it's just one
mini
hormone
pill.
Progestin.
Mini pill.
It is approved for women of all reproductive ages. That includes teenagers. And the hope is that this will help reduce the number of unintended pregnancies in this country. There are 6.1 million pregnancies every year in this country. About half of them are unintended. And the belief is now that you can go to the, you will be able to go to the drugstore, or the grocery store, or order these pills online.
Online.
That will help reduce that number. That should happen at the beginning of next year. But the big question tonight is how much will these pills cost? And the manufacturer has not put a price on it, only to say that they will be affordable.
And this is really menopausal hormone therapy, by the way. I love how they go so deep into aspartame, but, you know, is this okay? Is this okay for teenagers? I mean, you can buy it. It's one pill. It's a mini pill.
It must be.
It must be good. I mean, could it have any long-term effects?
But didn't they bring an expert on? No.
No. No,
of course not.
No expert for this.
That was what you played was a native ad.
Thank you. Of course.
I want to get back to the nutty teen problem.
Okay.
I have more
clips.
Well,
this is part of it. I mean, it's not like that. By the way, do you have a buzz today for something? Not like a buzz like you're buzzing. Hold on. Let me listen to you. You have a ground loop or something. I can hear it very clearly.
Changed nothing.
No, it's all right. Well,
It could be something laying on top of something that always happens. I don't have those magnets.
Wow, it's now that I can hear it, it's really bad. Is there something? There must be. You must be something laying on top of something. You gotta.
Well, I'll move things around.
Oh, stop! It just went away. What did you move?
A power supply.
No way! A power. Did you have it wrapped around the mic or something?
No, it was next to one of the filters.
Thank you. It's gone. It's gone now. Woo, that was a good one.
So, and I was going to put this earlier because it actually applies to, and I was going to, Mimi's listening to the show specifically for this presentation.
Oh, is it, and does it come from our favorite source?
You got it.
Talk, TikTok.
All right. This is four clips, but I don't know what order to play them in. I was thinking about, I'm going to play it in the worst order. In other words, I'm going to play the best one first, because that's the one that triggered the whole, the collection of the other clips.
Okay. I've seen this. I'm very happy you brought this to the show today.
And it has to do with, it's a new term called time blind.
Yes.
And the worst case example is this, I'm guessing she's a younger millennial, and she's bitching about the fact that everyone should change their way of life for her, which is very common on TikTok. And this is the TikTok time blind, just a straight up clip.
So I just got yelled at for asking a very reasonable question. So I'm applying to go somewhere, and I just wanted to know, are there accommodations for people who struggle with time blindness and being on time, you know? And then the person I was with interrupted and acted like I was asking something else. And then when we were done, they actually started yelling at me and saying that accommodations for time blindness doesn't exist. And if you struggle with being on time, you'll never be able to get a job, you know, provided you're trying your absolute best to be there. And then they're like, your stupid generation wants to destroy the workplace. And yeah, I think that a culture where workers are just cut off because they struggle with being on time, when there's other solutions that we can look to. I think that just anybody who thinks it's okay to just treat people like that, yeah, that culture needs to be dismantled. And then I asked that person, how can you feel good about yourself upholding this kind of system? And then to think, I'm entitled. No, if people think it's okay to treat others like this, that's entitlement.
Now, I watched this clip. I didn't see it on TikTok, of course, because I refuse. I watched this three times thinking, is this a joke? And I concluded after three views that she was serious.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, what happened to TikTok being kicked out of America? How come that hasn't happened, huh?
You keep bringing that up.
I just want to remind everybody that was the big news a month ago.
It's not even discussed for some reason.
Well, no, of course not. It's so great.
So this woman who talk about a privileged jerk, really thinks that everyone should, because she can't be on time. Well, why can't she be accommodated?
She's a victim, John. She has she's neurodivergent.
Now, Mimi can never be on time, but what we do is we trick her and make her, you know, tell her different times.
30 minutes earlier.
We do all those sorts of things. And when she really has to be on time, she is on time. But that brings us to the people who are discussing time blindness as though it is a thing.
I'm sorry. I need to stop for a second. Only because you brought up Mimi, and I know she's listening. I was not aware that she is time blind. Was not aware that, you know, y'all trick her into coming on time, being places on time. Because when Mimi wants something from me on time, she's a Nazi. She will send me emails, nag, nag, subject, nag, 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 nag.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Pot kettle black. Behavior. Wow. Okay.
Well, you know, on time with documents to the government is a little different than showing up for a play on time when you miss the first act. So,
okay.
Let's go to the time blind therapist.
Oh, brother.
All right, TikTok, here are five signs that you are time blind. Number one, you are either way too early or way too late to something. The idea of being on time is a completely foreign concept to you. Number two, you wildly underestimate the amount of things you can get done in a short amount of time, but you wildly overestimate the amount of stuff you can get done in a long amount of time. Number three, all of your stories start with the other day. It could have been yesterday. It could have been 14 years ago. Doesn't matter. The other day. Number four, you struggle with emotional object permanence. If you're not feeling it right now, it's hard to tell when you felt it before, and sometimes it just doesn't feel real at all. And number five, if you have a meeting or an appointment at some point later in the day, you have trouble starting things because you don't want to get sucked into them and accidentally miss your appointment. something you've learned the hard way. If you relate to this, hi, my name is Megan. I'm a mental wellness coach, and I can't help you perceive time passing better because people who are time blind simply don't perceive the passage of time the same way that colorblind people don't perceive color. But I can help you find tools to make your life a lot easier.
Okay, I've just changed my name from Adam Curry Podcaster to Adam Curry Mental Wellness Coach. This is the new vocation I want. I want to be a mental wellness coach. Now, is this not something that college is supposed to definitely teach you how to do before you enter the workplace?
School, regular school.
You know, how to organize your work, how to get your reports done on time.
Grammar school. High school, college, you don't need, if you haven't learned it by then.
Well, in college, you learn how to get things done on time and get blindly drunk. That's really preparing you for life.
It's a socialization exercise.
Okay. I'll take it, yeah.
Let's go with that's a therapist. And then we have an ADHD girl who kind of incorporates time blindness into her problems.
Oh, brother. Okay.
Let's do an ADHD experiment. Close your eyes. Now, with your dominant hand, point to the future. Open your eyes and notice where your hand is pointing. This is an exercise created by ADHD author Tom Hartman.
Okay. I closed my eyes and I pointed upwards, forward and upward. That was my future. I just want everyone to know I did the experiment.
And it's used
to
demonstrate...
You didn't point forward?
I said I pointed up, forward and upward. Forward and upward. Yeah, okay.
I think you're okay. You're neurotypical.
Are you sure? I'm worried.
Well, I don't know.
Well, let's find out.
Yeah, sure.
Let's find out.
Created by ADHD author Tom Hartman, and it's used to demonstrate.
I pointed forward 45 degree angle with my hand flat. Is that okay?
I'll show you how people with ADHD have a different experience of time. It is pretty common for neurotypical people to point in front of them in reference to the future, whereas people with ADHD tend not to do this. People with ADHD are very present oriented, and oftentimes when we have like life narratives, they're very non-linear because our sense of time is really non-linear. And we're not just talking about like time on your watch, like it's hard for us to tell how long 15 minutes is, but also it can be hard for us to tell if something happened like weeks ago or months ago or years ago, which can contribute to difficulties in so many areas of life, like missed credit card payments, staying connected with friends, and preparing for our future needs. Luckily, there's a lot we can do for this. My personal favorites that one of my friends does, she keeps a log of how long it takes her to do everything. So she has realistic time expectations for those simple tasks.
I think I know why this happened. Do you have a fourth clip, or did we have them all?
I think the fourth clip is the same clip. Play this, the fourth clip. I think it's the same clip we just listened to.
Let's do an ADHD experiment.
Yeah.
Close your eyes.
Same one. Never mind.
Here's what I think is happening.
Yeah, what is happening? Because, now it goes back again to Mimi and other people. I've known all my life, I've known women that can never be on time.
Ooh,
and they just don't care.
Misogynist. Women. Is this more a women thing than a men thing?
To me, it is.
Ooh.
And yeah, if you want to call it misogyny, it's observational.
Okay. Well, I can't speak for Mimi, but I think I can speak for this younger generation. The minute they gave up the analog clock, something that you wear on your wrist where you can get a feeling by from time to time glancing at your wrist.
You know, this is genius.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you points for that.
Yeah, points.
I start over because I think this may have something to do with it. And I will also incorporate the fact that they can't write in longhand or what they like to call cursive, because that's a continuum. Instead of a block, 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 letter, 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 it is a continuum, just like an analog clock. When the analog clock left, so did the cursive.
When my grandmother, when I was five, I think four or five, my grandmother gave me a Mickey Mouse watch. And I loved it because, you know, he had big hand, little hand. And I would wear it all day long. And, you know, my mom would say, you know, like, you know, be home at this time. It used to be when the street lights were on. Because it's on your wrist and you could glance at it, like, okay. And then you get a sense over time, you get a sense of how long 15 minutes is, because it's always there. When it's your phone and it's digital, it's just numbers. You lose the sense of the hour of the circle that you're completing. It's a completion of time. And I think, and we know that many Zoomers cannot even tell time from a analog clock. They're just not taught anymore. And I think that is part of the problem, is that inherent training you receive, and I say training, as a kid, wearing a wristwatch, just glance. And now, you know, now everyone has the Apple Watch or some other version of it, and it's all digital. I mean, yeah, you can set them analog, but I bet most people don't. When I had one, for the short period of time I had one, I had analog. I enjoy analog. It gives me a, what do you call it, sense of time. I think that's where the problem is. And by the way,
doesn't explain older women that are that
No, I'm not. Again, I can't explain older women. And the only one I know.
I think the phenomenon is exaggerated currently. It's like for
doesn't mean you wear a watch
in China.
Doesn't mean you wear a watch.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, there you go. Maybe
she has a clock in her on her cell phone. Like everyone, they carry their phone around all the time, and you just look at that. Boom, you know what time it is.
Maybe give her a Mickey Mouse watch to see if anything changes.
She won't wear it.
So that is probably what's going on here with these kids, and it's not something you can just solve. You know, learning time, the completion of 15 minutes, an hour, half an hour. It's something that takes a little while for you to get into it. You know, you get a sense of, how many minutes passed? Probably about 15. Oh, yeah, 13. Okay, I was close. You get a sense of that.
Yeah, because it's flowing.
Yes. Wow. I don't know where to go from here.
Well, I would like to make one more comment about the four, about the kids here, and they're being sterilized and the rest of them, and the kids in China and elsewhere, and the incels and the lack of dances and the lack of socialization and everything else going on. It's creating a group of people, and I think the four no's are the best example of no dating, no marriage. That maybe, you know how we talk about how the coronavirus was kind of created in a lab? It was created in a lab, and it would always kind of deteriorate into back to old fashioned coronaviruses, you know, just kind of a common cold stuff. But we just, is it possible the societies which are kind of created create situations that deteriorate back into what is more natural, which is a bunch of, you know, ne'er-do-well males hanging out with each other. I mean, I've known these guys forever. They don't care about women, and they don't, you know, chase after them. If they do, it's for one-night stands mostly. That the original societies, this may be the reason for kind of planned marriages where you grab someone and say, you have to marry this person because you're not going to do anything anyway otherwise. And so all these arranged marriages historically really stem back from the natural laziness of humans not to even want to interact much.
Mm.
And we're deteriorating back toward that.
Very possible. I like that.
We are deteriorating. I think we've concluded that on this show.
Well, you know what this all leads to? This all leads to universal basic income.
It
does.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah. It does. It's already, you know, being trialed all over the world. I think 30 states in America are already trialing universal basic income. You know, and then you can just, anybody can be a gig worker. Anybody can, if you can get a driver's license, you can drive for Uber Eats. You can drive for Uber, not for Lyft. They're almost broke. You know, you can drive for Amazon. It's going right back to Snow
it's
Crash.
Deteriorating.
It's going right back to Snow Crash, the book. When the only thing on the street is FedEx and Domino's pizza delivery. Everyone else is just in the metaverse. Although that didn't pan out. No. It is deteriorating. But I think it may even be, this is actually a Mo theory. Mo's theory is that the elites of the world who really run the show, they're keeping an eye on people who are not buying into it. That's who they really want. They want the survivors. They want the people who are not going to buy into
that's
all this
the no
crap.
Agenda listener.
Yes, it is.
Our producers are all survivors.
That's right. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your courage to say in the morning to you, the man who put the C in the sock hops. Ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. John C. DeVorek.
Well, in the morning to you, Mr. Adam Curry. Also in the morning, all ships and sea boots on the ground. Feet in the air. subs in the water and all the days and nights.
In the morning to all the trolls and the trolls. Stop moving! I think I got them all. 24-34.
Almost dead average.
Well, we got a note from Kendall.
Yeah, I know our
troll count,
our statistician, statistician. And then, no, he's actually the No Agenda Troll Room statistician.
Yes, and he says Thursday's average 1876, Sunday's average 2200. So we're about 150 above average today, which is odd because we have below average donations.
We didn't get any donations.
Well, we did get some, but...
We got no donations. I don't understand exactly why. Could we have thousands? I mean, there's more people in the troll room, not to mention the 10,000 or 20 or 30 or 50 or 100 or a million people that listen to this show that know about it. And we get 19 total donations over $50 today. That's ridiculous. No, I'm sorry. Make it 18. I always forget the one is a bunch that doesn't have anything in it.
We have
on the spreadsheet.
According to the open source OP3 statistics run by John Spurlock, which is part of the Podcasting 2.0 group, 980,000 monthly unique listeners. And I think that's about right. And the way we've now, so we could actually do, if we had content that was brand friendly and brand suitable, we could actually do okay with advertising.
I think we'd do better than we're doing today.
Oh yeah, definitely. But we chose for a different model. We chose for the value for value model. And a lot of people support us with value. I mean, we're getting boots on the ground reports, very valuable. We get artwork from artists, very valuable. We get jingles, end of show mixes, meetup reports, all very valuable. But you
got a small patch today.
Very valuable. Great value. Mm-hmm. We love that kind of value. But if everybody else is just sitting back and saying, well, you know what? I'm neurodivergent. I can't do anything of any value. And you can't even spare a couple bucks for the show that you listen to 6 hours a week, which is almost half. It's actually a full season of some Amazon shows.
It is. Six shows, we're done.
And by the way, we don't.
Where's my royalties?
We're not going on strike. You know, we don't. And we work through holidays. We work on the weekend.
2 weeks of this show is 12 hours, is pretty typical of a season of most TV nowadays.
Yes.
12 shows, 13 shows, 11, 12, 13. You see that a lot.
So I find it hard to believe that, and you may only be able to donate once a year, fine. But not everybody's donating. Not everybody's doing their part. A lot of you are hitting people in the mouth. It's appreciated. That's good. But we also do need the treasure part. But it's up to you. It's your No Agenda show. We just put it all together and create it and bring you our spice. Everything else is up to you. So we appreciate the trolls listening. Oh, yeah, those are the trolls. We're broke. Okay. All right, sure, you're broke. You can't afford $5? I mean, that's hard to believe. Hard to believe. Some people actually can't afford $5, but you know what they do? They go all out and do other things. And they know. I know, because they tell us about it.
Most of those people don't listen to the show.
Who doesn't listen to the show?
You can't afford $5. I doubt you're a listener.
Yeah, but you know, people think, oh, my $5 won't make a difference. It makes a difference. It really does.
Yeah, if we just had nothing but $5 for those 900,000,
you know, most people start a podcast and become very disillusioned because they don't get value back, and they're thinking, oh, if I only can get 10,000 people listening, then I can have enough for ads, and they wind up with $40 at the end of the month. It's true. But getting value back from people who, and I'm talking about real contributions. I mean, send this. Even your notes are part. It's an important part. The numerology you send along with these donations are important. And if you haven't donated in a while and you haven't contributed with your other time or talent, consider it being time to send some treasure. You don't have to do it every single show. It doesn't have to be hundreds of dollars. whatever value you get out of it, we want you to send that back. That's all we've ever asked for. It's just, this was a very disappointingly low show. Is that purely the economy?
In fact, we're lucky we only had one. We only have one lone executive producer, which is a first.
Yeah.
We haven't had that kind of showing for years, years. Remember when it's about 5 or 6 years ago there.
Yeah.
One show a year would have no executive producer. We had to bump somebody up.
Yep. I know.
Yeah, we haven't had to do that, luckily. Could have happened today if that check hadn't come in.
I know. But anyway, so far.
So we're going to stand here and complain bitterly. You know what? So the show is more interesting than us complaining.
So far, your contributions have allowed us to do the job that we do, which consists of, excuse me, continuous work, day in, day out. We are always doing No Agenda. People say, how many days do you work on your podcast? I said, 7 days a week. What do you mean? Starts every morning. Every morning I go through all the emails, and this is the ones that are already filtered out. I usually have, if I'm on track and I can keep it going, I have about 60 or 70 that have been filtered, and that's real stuff that I know is going to be something that's interesting. I can't skip a single one. Then I have a separate email box. There's like 5 people who send me 15 emails a day, and 14 of those are no good. Or they're repeats. No, but that it's that one gem that I want. So, and that box has 70 a day. So I go through first I have an alerts box, which is Tina, John, Mimi, you know, maybe my kids. Now that's it. Then I just check that to see if there's anything important that came in. Then I go to the inbox and there's, you know, we have clip collectors like Dave Ackerman on show days. We have clip custodian. We have Neil Jones. We have Steve Jones he's another clip collector. You know, and they're extremely valuable, the work they do. Everything has to be evaluated. Every TRT, F24, Deutsche Welle clip, every single one has to be looked at. There's no other people doing that here. There's no magic. And people are, man, hey, do you answer your own email? Yeah, who else? That's the only way you can make a podcast work. You can't hire staff in a podcast. That's why Spotify is going broke. They failed. They spent $1 billion on buying these.
Yes, this model is not radio.
No, it's not. And radio is going to go broke eventually, too. That model doesn't work either. But anyway. And I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful that we can do this. But I just want you to know that there will be an end. If that's the economy, that's the economy. Then I'm going to have to go.
And which reminds me,
I'll drive an Uber.
So these assholes are closing Anchor Brewing, one of the great, the original, you know, kind of boutique brewery in the world, or in the United States, or in California at least. And Anchor Brewing's been around for 127 years, I believe. And bought by Sapporo a few years ago, and Sapporo can't seem to run an American brewery, and they're going to shutter it. And the thing is, it's worth about $45 million, and there's not one Silicon Valley billionaire that can't just pick this thing up and run it let it run itself, or give it to the employees, or do a million different things. There's no Elon Musk or any number of hyper wealthy in the Bay Area, which there's tons of, that can pick up the slack on this. And so it's gone.
No, clearly no one found it valuable enough. Or, you know, other things are more valuable to them, like space exploration. I don't know. Anyway.
So how's our art?
Well, no, before we do that, I want to remind everybody that you too can become a troll for free, no charge. Go ahead. You can all trollroom.io. Go ahead, use whatever you want. And I love the people in the troll room who are, you know, bitching and moaning about us bitching and moaning. I don't recognize any of these people as donors, by the way. They are their contribution is memes on No Agenda Social. Great.
They're boners.
They're boners, not donors. We forgot about that. Boners, not donors. The best way to witness and experience No Agenda live stream is with a modern podcast app. And even if you're not able to listen live, you get 20 new features. We have transcripts you can search on. We have chapters. You can see all the images from the artists. Many, many cool features that are included in those. And there are hundreds of thousands of podcasts that are already using this. If you're not using a modern podcast app, go to podcastapps.com. In that, if you use Podverse, you'll get alerted when we go live, the bat signal. You tap on that. It's the same place you get all your other podcasts, which you can import from your legacy app. Just get one already. It's good. And you can support the whole ecosystem. You can support the app developers too. Because if you just want to stick with Google and Apple, good luck. Great talent is contributed by the artists of the No Agenda show. They contribute that at noagendaartgenerator.com. We find that to be a fabulous contribution.
I say something before you go into the art?
Yeah.
Since you brought up Google, we have there's a song, I guess it's a classic, coming up at the end of the show, mm-hmm. about Bing and Google and how the world can't live without
Google. Yeah.
Can't Live Without Google is the name of the song. And then Bing comes up in the conversation. And I was thinking, I was listening to that song, and I'm thinking, you know what would happen if Google actually just stopped and ceased existence? You couldn't use Bing.
No.
Because Microsoft would cancel it. They would shutter it overnight.
Why?
There would be nothing. This is what they do. They had this project where they were scanning library books, you know, along with Google. When Google finally said we're sick of it because we're getting sued left and right, Microsoft continued for a while. They looked left, they looked right. Google wasn't doing it, so they stopped.
Yeah.
It's a terrible company. Anyway, I just thought I'd get that out of the way because I couldn't do it after the show.
No. That's
end of show.
We want to thank Nico Syme. I have to say, the contributions in art are off the chart. The art's off the chart, man.
It is.
The past couple of episodes have been dynamite. And it's very hard for us to choose a winner. Nico Syme got the nod. Thought he had a brilliant piece of art, which was... And what I thought was brilliant about it, it was the fasten seatbelt sign, except it said no agenda, climate turbulence warning, and had the little buckle your fasten your seatbelt graphic. But it was exactly like an illuminated sign on a 737 from about 1985. Somehow it was perfect.
And well, you're the one that promoted this one.
I had liked the
piece by Sir Paul, who did a very nice piece of art, mm-hmm. which was just below it. I thought the art was superior. The Nico Syme stuff was kind of simplistic, but at the same time, when you brought up that it looked like the illuminated sign and it did have motion, it showed, and it got the point across, and the gag was there.
What was the one? What was the one you wanted?
The Sir Paul Couture's Fly the Turbulent Skies with the stewardess. Oh, it's an art piece. Actually, art.
Well, the problem
I use it for the newsletter.
Well, I had a different issue with that. Is that Curry Dvorak was very, very tiny.
Yeah, you didn't like that part of it. And then when I started thinking about it, I think that the opportunity was missed to have the stewardess flying in the air, or somehow look like she's tumbling, or something active, something moving.
Yes.
Because all the stories that we played about the turbulent skies involve some stewardess flying around, like, you know, just in the bumping her head or just flying through the air. And I thought that would have been a nice thing nobody picked up on.
May I add, since this is the donation segment and only people who listen get to hear the extra content and the magic number, we received a very beautiful email from Brandon, future Sir Homebound Separator of Baton Rouge Airspace, an air traffic controller.
He's an air traffic guy. Yeah.
ATC guy. And he said, oh, yeah. Oh, he confirmed. I also have the link if you'd like to see the fuel saving arrival route, which takes you right through the turbulence. He said there's also, within the last decade, the FAA has tightened the the spacing between aircraft, because modern aircraft can handle wake turbulence better. Now, wake turbulence is, it's really a spiraling flow of air that comes from turbine engines. So it used to be 5 miles separation. Now it's 3.5 miles. The result of that is a pretty much consistent layer of wake turbulence, because it's, there's always the wake never dissipates.
So everyone's getting a bump.
Yeah.
Like it or not, you're getting a bumpy ride in.
What it's not is climate change. It's not climate change. That's a lie. A lie, a lie, a lie. But I do like that some stupid Zoomers in Germany went on the runway and glued their hands to the runway, and they had to chop a piece of the runway out of the asphalt to get them from the runway, because they used epoxy and some cement. And there's these two dipshit girls with their hands glued to this piece of asphalt that they're now going to have surgically removed. And they're crying.
Two dipshit girls, yes.
Neurodivergent girls. So we looked at a lot of the pay pigs, but we really felt that, you know, unless you knew pay pig, that it could be easily misunderstood what the pay pig was. I kind of, in a weird way, like comic strip bloggers butt fart that looked like,
yeah,
the world.
You did like that for some unknown reason, which now just encourages him. Thanks for that comment.
I love the
By the way, I did like Nico Symes' pay pig, but and also Dan Kenny Benz. They did the competitive pay pigs using the same clip art.
And yes, they did that, which was interesting. We didn't think the pay pig in the PayPal logo was a good idea.
No,
for obvious reasons. I liked Baron of BNA's glide path, although, you know, esoteric. No, only pilots would understand what you were looking at. Glide right into the turbulence. That was funny for sure. What else did we? I think that was kind of it, wasn't it? But everything is so. Not everything hits the mark, but everything is quality. There's quality art, and we're very appreciative of that. And we love our artists.
And there's at least 5 to 6 pieces we could have easily picked without regret.
And already for today's show, we have 12, 14 pieces already uploaded. I mean, this race is on, man. This is good stuff. Thank you very much to our artists. And of course, thank you, Nico Syme. NoAgendaArtGenerator.com if you want to check it out in real time, or use that modern podcast app from podcastapps.com. Dreb Scott does also a great provider of value. He does the chapters for us and adds a lot of the art from the artists from the current episode, especially when we're talking about them, which makes it
actually
very cool.
There's 26 pieces on right
That's
now.
That's insane. All right, let's thank our executive producer and our, 4 or 5 associate executive producers. We kick it off with Dame TJ of the Side Eye. And she sent in a note, which I have here. Actually said, Dear Adam, didn't even add you to the list. What's up with that?
He hates me.
She doesn't hate you. No, because she actually refers to you. And she is from, where's she from? Hold on a second. Do we know where she's from?
Hatesville.
$302. True new story listener, : When I was a new listener, I had a completely wrong theory for why your wife was called the keeper. I figured since she had a job and you were a podcaster, she made all the money for the household. although that is not the genesis of her story, of her name. Yes, she had a real job. That made you a kept man and her your keeper. The true story is probably as romantic as JCD gets.
She
despises you. If there's any travel agents out there, please add to your info, to the No Agenda Marketplace so I can hire you. Oh, there you go. Here's a gig, everybody. Marketplace.yanoagenda.com. What is this? Did I miss something? The YaNoAgenda.com? Is that a marketplace that I was unaware of?
Never heard of it.
I guess so. Anyway, looking, so if you're a travel agent, you could be hired. Asking for jingles. Eat the bugs. Do we have an eat? There's no eat the bugs, is there? Isn't that just I love bugs? Eat the bugs. Let me see.
There is a clip that says eat the jingle, eat the bugs.
I found
you
it.
You will eat the bugs.
I found it. I found it. I found eat the bugs. And along with that, look at that juice and beautiful yum. Okay. Hiring karma, please, as I'm having problems building a sales team. If anyone wants a B2B sales job with a mellow boss and you're neurodivergent and time blind, please email me at tjohnson@otterandmule.com. Otterandmule.com. Signed, TJ of the Side Eye, the Christmas Dame.
You will eat the bugs.
Oh my gosh. Can you see that juice?
Beautiful. Yum.
Not bad.
You've got karma.
For being a hater, that was a pretty good sequence.
I'll give her that one.
That was a good sequence. We like that one.
Christy Zeitz in Hampton Bays, New York. Is our associate executive producer at $250. And she said Ronk, which is one of our podcasts a couple of shows ago. Ronk was the goat. I listened 2x. Thanks. I mean, she listened twice, not at 2x. It's a different.
Yeah, she listened two times. Yeah, very
she
good.
She listened two times. That's 6 hours of her time.
Here's a great example of someone who understands value. Dee's Laughs, who very often sends us an end of show mix, did not send one today. Instead, Dee's Laughs from Toronto, California, Canada, sent us some value, $241. Appreciate that. No jingles, keep it short and sweet. As a black man, I got some questions about Black Pete. Hopefully no pics of you dressed in Trudeau face come out. I don't think so. Everyone should become an executive producer one time at least. Thank you for the material to get me to start rapping. And thank you very much, Dee's Laughs. Appreciate that.
We did a whole show on Black Pete some years back.
Yes, it was before it was en vogue, even when it was just kicking off. And now they have a slave museum. It's well on their way to what the whole what it all was about. They started with the Black Pete, and now there's reparations on deck for Surinamers. Okay, all right, everybody. It has nothing to do with Black Pete, by the way. But there you go.
Emily Shade, I know that's the joke of it.
Yeah.
Emily Shade in Beaverton, Oregon. She says, hi, John and Adam. Adam and John, actually. The way she puts it. Finally checked my accounting and realized I was practically a dame. A perfect birthday present for myself, accounting attached. I request to be knighted Dame Emily, and you're on the list, and ask for cappuccinos and fruit tarts. At the round table, I'm also requesting a biscuit for my birthday, 31st birthday.
Yeah.
You can give her that right now.
They always give me a biscuit on my birthday.
Tomorrow, July 14th, and second mint. I don't know.
I think she wants Second Amendment karma.
Second Amendment karma, as I plan to pursue a rotation from the U.S. to the U.K. within my accounting firm. I don't know if that's Second Amendment. Thanks, y'all. Emily Shade, throwing some shade from Portland, Oregon.
Well, what do you think it is then? Because I have Second Amendment karma. I'll just give her this.
What's Second Amendment got to do with the UK? And
I don't know. Second Amendment. What's Second Amendment? What is Second Amendment?
Second Amendment.
Second Amendment. You want to look that up?
Maybe it's an actual word.
Well, I'm going to give her some gunfire karma.
You've got karma.
There you go. I mean, it might be something.
Can't hurt, right? Can't hurt. Let me just add her request to the round table. I didn't have that. Cappuccino and fruit tarts. Yay. We got Todd from Northern Virginia. Virginia. Nice palindrome. 212.12. Same forward as backward. Says, in the morning, John Adam, I had to thank the two of you and send some treasure back your way. You always say to never skip the donation segment, and my listening paid off. A small windfall came my way when I matched all the secret numbers to hit the jackpot. And because my numbers were a palindrome, I even hit the douchebag double.
Wow.
This is what the show does. Could you please send me some rental property buying karma so I can get another piece of the pie before BlackRock and Vanguard buy up all the country's real estate and send prices into the stratosphere? Thank you for your courage. Love is lit. Todd from Northern Virginia, of course. And congratulations on the douchebag double.
You've got karma.
So going back to Emily Shade.
Yeah.
Second mint. Is what we're supposed to be doing. A second mint is an arrangement where a company temporarily assigns an employee to a new position. The new position may be within the organization or with a separate business such as a client or supplier. Who the hell ever used that word in their life?
I don't know.
It's also considered a temporary assignment. Interesting. Okay, we learned something today.
Yes, thank you.
And we'll learn something else from Sir Malinowski in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Hey, y'all. This donation brings me to Baron status. Accounting is attached. I'd like to my title upgraded to Sir Malinowski, Baron of South Louisiana. Today's show was a banger.
Banger!
Listening to John try to process the information about pay pigs in real time had me cackling. What? I figured it was high time to be a pay pig once again for my favorite podcasters. For a jingle, can I get Atlas Shrugged?
Yeah,
followed by any Biden gaffe ISO. Thanks for all you do and keep it up.
Yeah, we got you.
By Ayn Rand.
There's a dead dog on my lawn.
It was not really a gaffe, but that's what I thought was funny to listen to.
When there was a dead dog on his lawn.
No, that was one of his things a while back.
And I'll get the last one here. Right,
thank you.
Because it's Linda Lupatkin. She's in Lakewood, Colorado.
Yes, of course.
And she gets my attention because she writes, jobs karma for all you job hunters out there. Ask for a competitive edge. Go to imagemakersinc.com for all your executive resume and job search needs. Or just find Linda Lupatkin under the show's producer list and run a search.
Jobs.
You've got Jobs. Karma. Thank you. I can do that, I guess, forever.
Thank you very much.
And now we have the rest of the group.
Let me just thank the executive associate, executive producers very much for supporting
us. All seven of them.
All seven, but these seven get titles. These titles are official anywhere credits and titles are recognized. Which would be on the picket line or at IMDb or even on your resume or, you know, if you're looking to get one of those non-union gigs, you can say, I've got a non-union credit right here. And they're good forever. And you can tout them anywhere. And if anyone questions them, we'll be happy to vouch for you. Thank you very much for producing episode 1573 of the best podcast in the universe. John's going to take us through the 50s. Won't take long either.
Andy K in Columbus, Ohio, 169.69. David Fugazoto, our buddy in Gladstone, Missouri. He's the Duke of Baron of the somewhere.
America's heartland and the Arabian Peninsula.
152.12. Rita Harrington, Sparks, Nevada, 152.12. Priscilla O'Leary in Ramona, California, 147. Tonight of the East Side, 133.33 in Maplewood, Minnesota. Here's a switcheroo. This is the Cape Coral meetup in Cape Coral, Florida. My wife attended the first No Agenda meetup in Cape Coral. 10 of us got together. It was a great time. Please de-douche Linda Baxter.
You've been de-douched.
Oh, that's Sir Dan the Man, Baron of Southwest Florida, Protector of Cape Coral and the islands of Sanibel and Captiva.
Silvana Gentile. In Orland Hills, Illinois, 100. Lucas Williams in Roswell, New Mexico, 100. QQQ in Key West, Florida, 100. Karen Strickland in Littleton, Colorado, 100.
Can I just mention QQ unsubscribe from all services, Amazon, Netflix, Google, Apple, etc. Made a monthly subscription to No Agenda. Money better spent today donating is because our company is slowly getting back on its feet, the effects of Biden and the mafia. But he canceled all of his douchebag subscriptions to support the best podcast in the universe. Just saying.
There's a lot of douchebag subscriptions there he listed. Chris Deacon in Burnt Ranch, California, $99.99. Aaron Weiberg in Roberts, Wisconsin, $8.008. Kevin McLaughlin, there he is, in Concord, North Carolina, $8.008. Boobs. Mike McCoy in Schaumburg, Illinois, $8.008. Sir Kevin's dedication to breasts is an inspiration to us all,
indeed,
he writes.
Indeed.
Mm. Sir Jerry Curl in Raleigh, North Carolina, 7140.
This was Baron the promotion. Of... This was the promotion.
Oh, Sir Jerry, it is?
Yeah, this was the Bastille Day promotion.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Great idea,
oh,
John.
Oh, yes.
Bastille
7140,
Day
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rocked, man.
I got one guy, Sir Jerry Curl. Baron of BN, well, you know, here's the joke of it. I sent that newsletter on the 15th, but Bastille Day was the day before, and I had the dates mixed up.
You thought,
and I said it was today, and it wasn't.
And maybe that's why it failed.
No.
No.
Maybe. Baron of BNA is up next in Nashville, Tennessee, $59.93. James Edmondson in South Plainfield, New Jersey, $55.10. Richard Futter in London, UK, $55.10. Pete Lockwood in San Francisco, California, with a birthday. 55.10. He needs a biscuit for his birthday. That.
They always give me a biscuit on my birthday.
Done.
You know why this power supply?
What are you doing? Don't go walk.
I had to move it.
Come back to the mic.
No, I'm trying to get this thing straightened out. I don't want to put it by the thing again.
What do you have to do?
So where was I?
Is it bugging you?
Yes.
Baron of BNA. 24.
Oh. In Nashville, Tennessee, he came in with $59.93. James Edmondson in South Plainfield, New Jersey, $55.10. No, I did all these 55.10s. I did Peter Lockwood in San Francisco.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Josh,
did all these,
the biscuit,
yeah,
for his birthday.
Yeah, you're right. I'm confused.
Troy Funderburg in Spokane, Washington. Yeah, Daryl for 55. Daryl Keck, Dubuque, Iowa, 51.10.
Are you not talking into the mic? You're definitely, something happens.
Oh, you know, it's this mic. Ah, the mic has moved on me. Hold on. I'm going to move it back.
You didn't see that?
No, I'm not looking at it. There we go.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for catching that.
Yeah.
This little nub needs to be tightened.
Tighten your nub.
Ugh, I can't. You know, it's like, you know, they put these little things on there, and there's not enough leverage to do any real tightening. Have you ever noticed this with this gear?
I don't have that.
Sir
kind
Economic
of
Hitman. Okay, Sir Economic. I'm sorry, I'm complaining. Sir Economic Hitman in Tomball, Texas, 5001. And here we go with the $50 donors. And it looks like I was wrong in my analysis, by the way. I want to apologize. Kevin Dills in Huntersville, North Carolina. Christian Freeman in San Marcos, Texas. Big Papa Productions in Minneapolis. Chris Lewinsky in Sherwood Park. Easy, Easy Landscapes in North Stonington, Connecticut. Michael Thompson in New Brownsfels, Texas. Philip Ballou in Louisville, Kentucky. Kelly McDill in Mission Hills, Kansas. Michael Parrott in Salem, Oregon. Todd Hendrickson in Woodstock, Illinois. Switcheroo for his youngest brother, Chad Hendrickson. And he does it again. $50, Woodstock, Illinois, for his brother Kyle Hendrickson of Carpentersville.
Oh, how cool.
Oh, wait a minute. He does it one more time.
Is this a mistake?
Todd, no Hendrickson brother should ever be known as a douchebag. So he's got all these. Oh, we need de-douched.
You've been de-douched.
De-douched, of course. Of course we de-douche.
Do another one.
Oh, right.
You've been de-douched.
Sarah Gordon in Tucson, Arizona, 50. Rick LaBanca in Hope, Rhode Island. And Somitra Saravana in Fredericksburg,
Virginia.
Oh, Virginia. Never been a donation from Fredericksburg,
you know,
Texas.
That's a good point. And I know there's people listening. And quite frankly, I'm disappointed in y'all. Y'all. Notice I speak to the locals here. Y'all.
No, that's yeah, because last on the list is Wendy Brahman in Saginaw,
yeah,
Michigan.
What's up with that? Everybody's listening here. But the whole town listens to No Agenda.
They don't like us.
It's possible.
They hate listen.
Possible. It's just hate listens. It's possible. It's very possible. You never know. The douchebags.
Well, there was, I'm sorry, there was 46 people, 45 people, not 19. I was wrong.
Oh, all right.
But I was looking at it. I don't know what I was looking at. It was a different spreadsheet. I'm not sure.
Thank you to all of our donors, of course, those who did step up and who do deliver the value back to us, which makes us happy. It makes us feel good about what we're doing. And of course, people who come in under $50, we will not mention anything there for anonymity, just in case, you know, you can be sure that we'll never mention under 50, but there's a lot of subscriptions. You can do your own numbers, your own subscription. You can go to, well, we have a website where you can find out exactly what kind of subscriptions already pre-programmed for you.
Dvorak.org/NA.
Is Codes Monkey working on the new donation site? Is that, I mean, as seriously, I'm not complaining.
As far as I can tell.
Okay, just want to make sure. Thank you all very much. Thank you again to our executive and associate executive producers. We really appreciate you producing 1573.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
Water. Shut up, Slade.
Shut up, Slade.
And we have a couple of birthdays to celebrate. Chris Casey celebrated on the 29th. Happy belated birthday. Dame Emily turned 31 on the 14th. Pete Lockwood, which is his brother John, a happy birthday, turning 51 tomorrow. And Derek, by the way, says happy birthday to his smoking hot wife Danielle and human resource Mason. They both will be celebrating on the 20th. Happy birthday from everybody here at the best podcast in the universe.
Can I?
No. Whenever I have that speed just rocking and rolling, you always want to break
it. You write it over yourself so you don't allow me the time to interrupt.
No, because this is what we call steam, baby. We're steaming full steam. This is where we congratulate Sir Malinowski as he has now become a Baron. Sir Malinowski, Baron of South Louisiana. Thanks to his additional support and a total of $1,000 to the No Agenda Show, we thank you very much. And congratulations with your barony, Sir Malinowski. Yes, John, you had a question.
No, I have an apology.
Oh, okay.
I have an apology to make to Dame TJ of the Side Eye after writing her for being a hater.
Oh, okay.
It turns out she wrote a card, which was scanned, I'm sure, specifically to me.
Oh, and she's a lover, not a hater?
Yeah, she says, love you, John.
No. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
You for need all to, that and more.
You need to repent.
Happy podcast day.
It's
she had, this is a happy birthday card she's repurposed.
It's podcast day?
I don't know.
How can it be podcast day when it's artificial intelligence day?
Well, same thing. So,
yeah, same difference.
She says that she has, and she's the one to put a little patch in there that says, awesome dad, great guy.
Hey, you got a patch.
She writes.
Oh, man. You repent.
I do. She writes, I especially like it when you use rare words like cloche.
Cloche.
That I've read, but never heard.
How about that? How about that?
It's a minor point, but okay.
No, but people love you for your vocabulary.
Thanks for all you do, she writes. Oh, so I was a cad. I was literally a cad to her.
I would say douche, but okay, cad. Yeah, cad is
cad's
a good word.
It's a better word. Like, cloche.
Better word.
It's like cloche. It's just more, yeah, douche we use too much on the show.
We have Emily standing by here. Emily Shade would like to receive her damehood. So if you can.
Well, I've got the special dame blade here.
Nice blade. Hello, Emily Shade. Pop on up here because you are about to become dame of the No Agenda Show. No Agenda Roundtable is where you shall sit. Thank you very much for your support to the No Agenda Show, Dame Emily. I mean, Emily, because now I'm going to officially pronounce the KB as Dame Emily, Dame of the No Agenda Roundtable and of the show. And for you, Dame Emily, by request, we have cappuccinos and fruit tarts, but maybe you'd like some Rent Boys and Chardonnay. I don't know. We do have them on tap, just in case. Also, for you, we have pepperoni rolls and pale ales. We got redheads and rye. We got organic macaroni and plasticizers, Bleer beer and blunts, ginger ale and gerbils, breast milk and pablum, bong hits and bourbon, or maybe just the mutton and mead. It goes well with your aspartame dose, so head on over to noagendarings.com. Take a look at that beautiful Dame ring that we have on display there. And if you send us an address, we'll get it off to you along with your ring size. There's a handy ring sizing chart there. And thank you again, Dame Emily, for supporting the best podcast in the universe, your No Agenda show.
No Agenda Meetup.
A lot of producers are providing value to the community that is the No Agenda show. People who go to meetups, they pretty much always donate. I've noticed that. So that's very much appreciated. We got a report from the Dayton, Ohio meetup from Sir Egghead, Knight of the Long Shadows of Trash Mountain. He says it was a spur of the moment mini meetup this past Friday night at Dublin Pub in the heat on the patio in Dayton, Ohio. In attendance, me, Sir Egghead, Sir Nick, Lucas Deaton from Dayton, Mousy Bear, and Abel Kirby, Sir Abel Kirby from Rare Encounter, and Carol from Hog Story, who I didn't realize were local-ish. As well, I'll say it, I said it before, I'll say it again. Go to a meetup or start one yourself. It's like a party. Good people.
Where was that?
That was in Ohio, Dayton, Ohio. Good people. Interesting conversation. No butts hurt, even when asking if black people get the hiccups. You see, this is... Woo! All right. Thank you very much for that report. We have more reports. Here's one from Fort Worth.
In the morning, this is Serotonin, and here is the meetup report for the Fort Worth meetup. I'm going to pass the phone around, and thank you. I want to thank everybody for showing up.
Hey, John and Adam. Sir Turbo here in the Fort Worth meetup. In the morning.
This is Sir Tim from the Terrence Swamplands. In the morning, make sure to go to a meetup. It's a great time.
Sir Ellie Fonts here from North Idaho, Post Falls. I'm here to meet up in Fort Worth. Awesome people. Glad I came. Yuppie.
You see, a lot. You can hear it. There's always dames and knights at these things. These are people who really support the show, and they know connection is protection, why you always have to attend a meetup regularly. Let's go to Leo Bravo, Flight of the No Agenda.
Hi, everyone. It's Leo Bravo at Flight of the No Agenda meetup number 42. I'm passing the phone around. Some folks have words to say.
Definitely don't miss out on the next No Agenda meetup. Great conversation, great people, great weather. You got to find more community, and it'll make you feel good. So come by.
Hey, guys, this is Slick Rick. And a great time at the meetup at the Proud Bird with Leo the Spook.
In the morning, this is Raina from Glendora.
Sir Milkman, in the morning.
This is Raquel from Arcadia, in the morning.
And B Dizzle from Altadena.
In the morning.
Ah, beautiful. One more to go.
Where's this folks?
We don't like to foster a competitive atmosphere, but we laugh a lot. Now everyone hug and share a secret.
In the morning, Gitmo Nations with Zena here and in the...
Oh, I'm sorry. This is the Switzerland meetup, the No Credit in Suisse meetup, which was quite large. I think there was 10 people, all handsome and pretty.
Secret.
In the morning, Gitmo Nations with Zena here, and in the evening to all the Curry and the Keeper listeners.
Oh, thank you.
This is Casimir from Zurich in the morning, and trust we much.
This is Sir Richard Barbarossa. In the morgen, schon
in the
Eden.
Morgen.
This is Marty, the Matrix has you. In the morning.
Hello, this is for Sir Luca, and we're having a great time.
Hi, everybody. ITM, I'm Oscar, reporting from Zurich. We had a nice time today. You should do it, too.
ITM from Walesau, from Gitmo Nation Fondue Cheese. We had a lovely meeting in Zurich. And, if anyone has any questions about solar panels, hit me up on NAS.
You've got karma.
Okay. You don't need to produce it like that, but thank you. It just blows me away that we got a group of people who meet in Zurich to just hang out, connect with each other, find their community. and just be part of No Agenda Nation and Gitmo Nation fondue cheese. Thank you so much. I love that. We have a promo for Texas. Baron Scott checking in for us.
This is Baron Scott here to let you know it's that time of the year again. The third annual Central Texas Float Meet is set for Sunday, August 13th. This year we'll be on the spring-fed San Marcos River. We'll meet at the Rail Yard Bar and Grill for each of libations after our three-hour float. Go to noagendameetups.com for details and to RSVP to both the morning float and the afternoon meetup. Connection is protection on the river.
On the river, indeed. Thank you very much, Baron Scott. Coming up today, we have the Tucson Wild West Side Meetup. That's underway, I think. Arizona Whiskey Roads, Tucson. We have Hunter's Deviated Septa Memorial. Oh, so sad. His septum is deviated. Miller's Ale House in Mount Laurel Township, South New Jersey. I think it's underway. On Thursday, our next show day, North Idaho Sanity Brigade, 5 o'clock. It's Selkirk Abbey in Post Falls, Idaho. The South Mississippi Testing the Turnout Meetup. That's the second one. Keg and Barrel at 6:30. And Hattiesburg, MS is Missouri? No, Mississippi. MS is Mississippi?
Yes.
You're peeing. I got you. And the
no,
last
I'm
one.
No, I'm not. I'm sitting here, and yes, it is.
That's okay. I would pee during.
But I'm supposed to be, but now that you're going to pull that stunt.
And then finally, Charlotte's Thirsty Third Thursday monthly meetup, 7 o'clock at Ed's Tavern in Charlotte, North Carolina. Man, we have a lot of meetups going all the way through August. We have Nyborg, Denmark on July 21st, Maastricht, the Netherlands on the 21st. I'm just looking for the international ones. We have Da Nang, Vietnam on July 29th. Hello, Vietnam. Da Nang.
Where it's going to be.
And of course, Vilnius, Lithuania on August 26th, which is just in time for the next NATO meeting, apparently. We appreciate all of these organizers. It's so good. It's so important. This is something that everybody can benefit from. It really will complete your No Agenda experience if you go to a meetup. NoAgendaMeetups.com. Thank you, Sir Daniel, for keeping that website up and running. Thank you, Mimi, for coordinating it all. If you can't find one near you, start one. NoAgendaMeetups.com. It's easy.
Go hang out with all the nights and days.
Bom, bom, bom.
You wanna be where you want me. Trigger out all the same. Everybody feels the same.
Like a party.
Before you get to the ISIL, since you mentioned Vietnam.
Yes.
I want to play a clip that came off of what sent in by a producer, came off of C-SPAN about Kamala's visit to Vietnam and a kind of a gaffe.
Kamala, Vietnam. Okay, got it.
Flowers at the site where John McCain was shot down in Vietnam. What the know-nothing millennials who set Kamala's schedule didn't know is that the site that she's laying those flowers at, it's a celebration of those who shot McCain's plane out of the sky and then captured him, delivering him to the VC for his long stay and torture at the Hanoi Hilton. The stunning ignorance of Kamala Harris and her team was noted by Yawen Zhu, a journalist based in Beijing. She tweeted, "Does Harris know this monument honors the people who shot down John McCain's plane? Vietnamese people view him as a war criminal." So in essence, Harris was paying tribute to those who shot down John McCain's plane. It'd be like Harris laying a wreath at Pearl Harbor, honoring the brave Japanese pilots who sunk the USS Arizona.
Wow, wow, wow. Hold on a second. I had no idea that's a better gaffe than the stupid population thing. This is a clip of the day, John.
Yep.
Clip of the day.
Now we might as well play the one that everyone's laughing about, which is the population gaffe, and I've got it right here.
Think about the impact on something like public health. When we invest in clean energy and electric vehicles, and reduce population, more of our children can breathe clean air and drink clean water.
Clean water! Clean water! MK Ultra victim.
Well, you know, I know what she was meant to say.
Pollution.
pollution, but yeah, of course, said population came out. The truth must come out.
Yeah, it had to come out because that ultimately is exactly what it's about. Reduce the population. The carbon is you, people. The carbon is you. ISOs.
I have three. What Woo-hoo, do you got?
I got four.
Oh,
Well, you go first. They might be really
okay,
good.
Okay, this time.
Okay.
Okay, start with think.
Think.
Think about it.
Not bad.
Okay, then we'll go to water.
Water.
Can I have a drink of water?
Let me hear that again.
Can I have a drink of water?
May I have a drink of water? Yeah, that's pretty good. Pretty good. It's funny.
Then we got yes, yes.
Yes, 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 yes.
Cute. Where's that from?
I don't remember. It's some NPR.
All right. I have four. Let's see if anything's any good.
But just because they're crazy doesn't mean they're stupid.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. It's insulting.
I think we want more balls. Dude, look at my boys.
But this is the last one I have. This may be the one.
I think they're fantastic.
Come on.
Yeah, that's it.
Jen Psaki, baby. Jen Psaki. She's the best. Our Jen is. Well, let's see. Oh, I had something, just a brief one, and I'm sure you have some other stuff, but I just wanted to play this clip followed by a Redux clip. This is ABC.
One day after getting some good news about the inflation rate, some troubling news about the federal deficit. It nearly tripled in the last 9 months. Government spending on Medicare and Social Security went up, while tax revenue went down. The bank bailouts back in March also contributed.
The bank bailouts back in March contributed to the deficit. The deficit, if I'm just so I understand, is the deficit, is that something that gets put on the taxpayers ultimately?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, who else are you going to stick it to?
Exactly.
You got to get it from someone. Corporations, all taxpayers.
If you spend money you don't have, so you have to borrow it, that is a deficit. And that, again,
all tax revenue went down. The bank bailouts back in March also contributed.
So the bank bailouts contributed to the deficit, which is a burden for the taxpayers.
Well, also they also mentioned that the tax...
Well, let
went
me get
down.
To,
in other words,
but let me get to my point. The bank bailouts went into the deficit, which gets put onto the taxpayers. Let's go back in time.
This morning, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is expected to face some grilling over the banking system on Capitol Hill. According to prepared remarks, Yellen will reassure that taxpayer money is not being used or put at risk in the fallout, and that Americans can feel confident their deposits will be there when they need them.
And we were assured that this would not be put on our shoulders.
Well, no, she was specifically referring to the specific banks that the FDIC picked up. They already had the taxpayer money.
Are you defending Janet Yellen?
Yeah.
That's an outrage.
For what she said there, yeah, because all she said was that, don't worry, we got this cover. We're not going to stick it to the taxpayers because they've already been stuck.
So apparently, Janet Yellen, when she was in China, consumed 4 servings of Jianshu Qing, a type of wild mushroom, which some say are hallucinogenic. Are you familiar with this?
I'm not familiar with this story. And she had 4 servings?
4 servings.
They're probably tasty mushroom.
The media coverage was quite enthusiastic and even praised Yellen's chopstick skills. However, these particular mushrooms are notorious in their native province of Yunnan for their unpredictable psychedelic effects. The Xinhua state news agency published a report about the mushroom's potent powers only after Yellen had left, where one connoisseur shared, you thought you were walking straight, but you just fell sideways. Dr. Peter Mortimer, professor of the Kunming Institute of Botany, informed CNN he knew someone who mistakenly consumed these mushrooms and experienced hallucinations for 3 days. How about you?
I don't know that she noticed.
No one noticed from her behavior either, oddly. Stupid Janet Yellen.
Wow.
How about that, huh?
Well, that's not a mainstream. They should have been playing that on CBS.
I got a lot of people warning me about my kratom experiment. like a lot.
And I want to hear about it.
Well, I got emails saying, "Yo, you shouldn't do that. I know guys who are strung out. It's highly addictive. They got gastrointestinal issues." And, you know, so Steven, our Kratom producer, he says, "Yeah, okay, sure. People who use the toss and wash micro powder flour, yeah, if you're using that you buy at some head shop, yeah. But he brews it from red and green kratom leaves." He says, very different. We're not talking about the same stuff. And most of the stories about, and by the way, I haven't consumed any since. I mean, I will have a bottle. He sends us six. So it's not like I'm going to get strung out on kratom.
That'd be a good one.
But he says most people use kratom to try and get off of real opioids. And so, you know, when you get the FDA with a kratom death list, you know, they don't actually test to see if anyone has any other addictions. I'm not trying to say, like, I'm not trying to defend my kratom intake because it does give you a buzz. It's a nice little buzz for sure. I doubt that it'll be.
It doesn't give you energy. I thought that was the point.
No, it does not give me energy. No, but it just makes me feel kind of groovy for a bit while we're watching Friends. You know, it's like it's nice.
You're always feeling groovy.
It's really, I'm feeling groovy. Da 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 da. Feeling groovy.
All right, we got. I got a short.
Oh, go ahead.
What?
Go ahead.
I got a client. Yeah, we could. How about
Cokegate? We need to do Cokegate.
We don't have any. I have no Coke anything.
Oh, I have nothing but Cokegate.
Okay, well, let me play this little funny clip first.
Okay, your funny clip.
It's another TikTok clip.
Oh yeah.
This is UCLA students.
Two times.
Wait. This man on the street. UCLA students being asked questions.
Two times two times one.
Two.
Which ocean is on the east side of the United States?
The east one.
Yeah. You're from New York, right?
Yeah. Pacific.
You guys know this.
I know this. I don't know this.
Pacific? No, I can't do the oceans. I don't do the oceans. Pacific.
What is the capital of the United States?
Solve! I knew he was going to embarrass us.
I know, D. Wait, I didn't want to think because I don't want to sound dumb.
Well, just,
there's no capital of the United States. Literally, is there no capital?
Correct.
Is that right?
No.
Oh,
you guys are UCLA students?
We literally
students?
Go to UCLA. It's, yeah.
Wow. Divorce California.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, just saying. Divorce
those
California.
Are the girls we're looking for.
They sound neurodivergent at best.
Oh, no.
Cokegate, everybody. Cokegate. There's some weird things in these reports that I do want to I want to highlight. Some commonalities. Let's start with NBC.
Tonight, the Secret Service coming up empty. After days of investigation and sophisticated forensic testing, officials cannot identify who left a small baggie of cocaine.
Okay, small baggie. What are these people, regular coke users, that they use terms like small baggie? Wouldn't you just say a bag of cocaine, a small bag? But why small baggie? Is that what you use when you call
it? Baggy, which is an old term from the 60s, 70s, 80s for a baggie of marijuana. So there's
pot smokers.
And,
exactly.
And they're relating to pot smoking.
Yeah. Weird,
baggy.
Isn't that weird?
There's never been cocaine in a baggie, that I know
of. A baggie. It's like
it's baggies.
It's sold in ounces. It's an ounce of cocaine, a half ounce, a quarter ounce, a teeny beany bit of ounce. But they're all using.
I thought it was in grams.
Well, I'm talking Europe. I don't know. I mean, we do everything big in Texas.
Well, that's a good point. Good comeback.
Officials cannot identify who left a small baggie of cocaine.
It's kilos, keys, baby, keys.
In a storage cubby used for electronic devices near this West Wing entrance. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy raising doubts.
But if they can't tell us who brought it, What else is happening in the White House they can't tell us about? What else is coming into the White House they can't tell me about? That even concerns me more now.
Lab tests conducted at the FBI crime lab did not develop latent fingerprints, and insufficient DNA was present for investigative comparisons. Officials said they used video and entrance logs to compile a list of more than 500 individuals who had access to the entrance in the days before it was found July 2nd. But without physical or video evidence, officials could not connect the drug to any suspect.
It's a complete failure. I mean, this thing is ridiculous.
The White House said it is reviewing the findings. Democrats acknowledge, despite law enforcement's efforts, the mystery remains.
It's a mystery. Mystery. Let's listen to CBS if they have any more clues to this mystery.
Now, the other big story today, the Secret Service said it has closed its investigation into that mysterious bag of cocaine that was found in a White House work area earlier this month.
What's her name? Is this Nora? No, yeah. This is Nicole.
No, that's Nora.
No, it's Nicole. It's Nicole. It's Nicole Scanga.
The person that's just reading that right there?
I think so.
Play it again.
No, we'll continue.
So why wasn't a suspect ever identified? We get answers from CBS's
that's
Nicole
Nora.
Scanga at the White House.
Nicole Scanga's at the White House. Come on in, Nicole.
After the Secret Service discovered cocaine in the West Wing of the White House, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said President Biden expected a thorough investigation.
The president thinks it's very important to get to the bottom of this.
But after just 10 days, the Secret Service closed its investigation, unable to identify whose cocaine it was and how it got inside the White House. The small baggie containing
why are they all using the term baggie?
Roughly 0.2 grams of the drug was found July 2nd, just inside the guest entryway to the West Wing in a cubby used by visitors to store cell phones, steps away from the Situation Room. FBI analysts examining the bag looked for traces of DNA and fingerprints, but found no definitive results. The Secret Service, which briefed the House Oversight Committee this morning, scoured video inside and outside the building and said no surveillance footage provided investigative leads.
They don't know who it is, and it's a complete failure.
Some Republicans left the briefing demanding answers.
How can in the White House, 24/7 security, they find cocaine, but now they just close the investigation?
In its statement, the Secret Service cited the difficulty in singling out a person among the hundreds of individuals who passed through the area where the cocaine was discovered.
The Secret Service has a canine unit that screens for explosive devices and biohazards, but not illegal drugs. And for some lawmakers, this incident now raises questions about security protocols at the White House.
This is very disturbing. We cannot find who of these 500 people who passed through that entrance dropped their baggie of cocaine. Let's go to PBS.
The Secret Service has finished investigating how a baggie of cocaine
baggie?
Got
enough.
Into the...
Even PBS is using baggie. What is up with baggie? Come on. I need answers. Why is this called a baggie?
Investigating how a baggie of cocaine...
Because somebody, whoever sent out the press release used it?
No, there must be.
And they're just parroting the press release.
A baggie of cocaine got into the White House with no leads and no suspects. The powdered drug turned up in a lobby area used by staff and tour groups alike. A Secret Service report says tests found no fingerprints and no DNA, and video of the lobby entrance was no help.
So there were no fingerprints and no DNA on the baggie. Bull crap. Come on. You wiped your baggie? Let's listen to see if Chuck Todd, Chuck Toddcast is on the same tip of baggie. Meet the press.
Welcome back. The investigation into that dime bag of cocaine.
Dime bag?
Did he say that?
He said dime bag. There's no, a dime bag is weed. Even I know
that.
Yeah,
it's a weed thing. Yeah, you don't have a dime bag.
Why is he saying dime bag? This is ridiculous.
This is code. How about that for an idea?
Okay, well, why is he using different code?
It's code for marijuana because they found Kamala's stash. And they're just making it clear to her that to be more careful.
It's you, Kamala. We know it's you.
Welcome back. The investigation into that dime bag of cocaine that was found at the White House earlier this month is over. But there's no conclusion on who is responsible. The Secret Service announced this morning that no forensic
It wouldn't be a dime bag anyway.
A dime is a price. It's $10.
Yeah, so it'd be $10 or $100, depending on what street art got.
I wouldn't know because I can only afford nickel bags.
But there's no conclusion on who is responsible. The Secret Service announced this morning that no forensic or video evidence was able to clearly identify anyone potentially responsible for bringing this dime-sized baggie of the drug.
Dime-sized baggie. Now he throws the baggie.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
It's the size of a dime.
A dime-sized baggie? That's there you got. You got your nailed one there.
What is this dime-sized baggie? That's
this a little bitty thing.
It's the size of a dime.
Well, that's what he said. The way he described it, this guy's got 1 foot out the door. He's not even being careful
about
anything.
Chuck Todd has never seen cocaine in his life, apparently, or weed. No wonder he's getting fired.
Clearly identify anyone potentially responsible for bringing this dime-sized baggie of the drug into the White House. Secret Service did brief members of the House today. Three sources familiar with that briefing tell NBC News that they had narrowed down the list of individuals who were in the area in question 48 hours before the cocaine was found to between 500 and 600 people.
Now, the only person who has the right idea about this, I'll play this next one. So what are they going to do with these 500 people?
Did they interview anybody?
Not that we know of. What we've been told is they looked at the surveillance video. They went through the visitor logs. And I suspect they would have done interviews if they had had some sort of forensic evidence that they could try to match to someone. But no one has talked about interviews in the time that I've been working on this over the last 10 days.
I've been working for 10 days on this dime-sized baggie gate.
So the surprising thing is people would expect, of course, they can solve it. The FBI crime lab was involved. Fort Detrick, which does very sophisticated testing.
Fort Detrick was called in the Detrick boys.
Stop the presses.
Fort Detrick, come on, help us find the owner of this dime-sized baggie.
So I have to assume that the mention of Fort Detrick had to do with the fact that they thought it might be anthrax. And we know that that's where it would have come from.
Oh, this is so good.
Expect, of course, they can solve it. The FBI crime lab was involved. Fort Detrick, which does very sophisticated testing of things that could be anthrax or ricin or a biological agent. In this case, what they're saying is it was a very small plastic baggie. They could not get
a very small plastic baggie.
What they're saying is it was a very small plastic baggie. They could not get finger.
Was it a Ziploc?
I've got to think.
Hold on a second. Where's the reporting here?
I've got to think all these people do coke.
Where is the reporting of whether it's a Ziploc bag or a Glad bag? What kind of bag is it?
Well, they all know what it means because they're all using the baggie code. Hey, you got a baggie on you? Yeah, give me some coke. I'm about to go on air. Except Chuck Todd. He doesn't know anything.
No, he's par for the course for that
square.
Show.
He's square.
He's a square man.
He doesn't do coke. He doesn't do weed. It's like, no, get rid of that guy. He's not partying.
He's an incel.
Of things that could be anthrax or ricin or a biological agent. In this case, what they're saying is it was a very small plastic baggie. They could not get fingerprints that were usable off of that. They did some advanced testing, expensive process.
Expensive process? Oh.
No, that's the process where they do the... That sublimation process is kind of expensive.
Oh. Some advanced testing, expensive process, and DNA didn't have enough material to do a comparison. If they had found something, then you would need to figure out, well, how do you compare it? Mm-hmm. And if you're talking about visitors, people who are coming in on a tour, a staff-led tour, not a public tour.
I was just going to say, we should remind people, this is why I'm a little skeptical of whether they could find it or not, because this is not the most trafficked entrance. And this is a VIP entrance.
VIP.
In some form or another.
VIPs go through there, but there are a lot.
These guys can't get their story straight. At first, it was carpenters only went through there. It was by the parking lot.
It's Kamala's. I'm sure of it.
This is not the most trafficked entrance. And this is a VIP entrance. entrance, West Exec, in some form or another. Is it?
VIPs go through there, yeah. But there are a lot. I call it a working entrance, meaning not a ceremonial entrance.
I don't get to go through there. I mean, I've only been through there if I've been escorted.
Yes.
Because it's not a press entrance.
It is not a press entrance.
If I've been, it's not the press. We may know everything about baggies, but it's not us. It's not our. It's not our skank. Not our blow. Not our powder. Not our snow, baby. It's not us. Certainly not Chip Togs.
But those
that's
who
basically
are,
what he just said.
It's not us. It's not us. We did. We're all cokeheads here because we all talk about baggies. By the way, I love how fast you're talking.
It's not a press entrance.
It is not a press entrance. Yeah. But those who are.
It's the drug dealer's entrance. We all know that's where the dealers come in.
It is not a press entrance. Yeah. But those who are right now, there is a lot of construction being done, some remodeling being done. So there are contractors, military personnel.
Oh, it's the damn carpenters. You're right, John.
Staff will go through there. The president will go through there, yeah. Going over to the EEOB. But in terms of visitors, it was a holiday weekend, and there are a lot of staff-led tours that happen after work hours and on the weekend. And so some officials are saying the leading theory is it was a visitor.
No. Marjorie Taylor Greene has the right idea.
This is why I'm a little skeptical of whether they could find it or not, because this is not the most trafficked entrance. And this is the VIP entrance.
Well, this is not what I wanted.
Wait. Can I make a comment?
Yeah, please. It's
just come to me.
She wants.
I think
to
it was a drop point. I think that was a secret. That's why there was no fingerprints or anything on it, because the guy literally did a wipe down and he dropped it there for someone else to pick up.
Possible.
I think it was the dealer's drop point. He could get got somehow involved with the carpenters, whoever's going there. He got through, the entrance, dropped it there for someone, Kamala or Hunter come to mind to pick it up.
Well,
and they didn't pick it up. It's just like, who else doesn't pick stuff up?
Well, then there must be a Venmo payment.
A laptop? Anybody? A little example of the past? Not picking up a laptop? Not picking up your drugs?
I think this is a duplicate clip, I think, because Marjorie Taylor Greene, let me see if it's here. Hold on a second.
We don't know.
That's the Occam's razor.
Yes,
like the most likely thing is somebody that was. What am I having?
And there's a drug policy and drug testing requirements for employees of the White House.
They still do drug testing.
Yes, they do.
And it's randomized drug testing.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
And so one of the congresswomen, Marjorie Taylor Greene, was saying, well, test all 500 of the names on the list. Well, of course, you need probable cause to do that.
No,
you can't
you
just massively test people who might have been visitors. So it's an unsatisfying answer for a lot of people.
You can't just massively test. Yes, if you were in the White House, I think you can be tested. You can massively. We tested millions of people for COVID.
They know it's a waste of time.
Well, The View had more interesting data than these jabrokes.
Here's what I'd say. Is this the most important story of our time?
Yes, it is.
No. Does it matter? Yes. So this entrance where it was found is the West Exec entrance.
I thought it was found in the library.
No, everyone's lying. That's why it's so funny.
Wing, which is not one that is used for more ceremonial events. It's really where senior staff who have blue badges that allow them access to the West Wing go in.
Ooh, senior staff.
You have to be escorted in if you're a guest by somebody who has a badge to go in. It's literally 10 steps from the Situation Room, which I believe is under renovation, but just so you get a sense of like where it is in the building.
Maybe it was one of the generals, or the five-star generals, all jacked on coke.
The VP.
I can see that.
Ooh. The VP.
The VP, Vice President Harris, walks in that entrance every day because her motorcade drops her off there.
Every day. That's your drop point.
That's the rumor.
Hey VP, I'll drop it when you come in tomorrow through this entrance as you do every day. Just send me a Venmo.
It's foot traffic of senior staff and every person.
But visitors too, and there are a lot of little cubbies because
visitors.
Been in there.
You have to be escorted by senior staff.
You have to be invited.
You have to be invited, have gone through the Waves program, and be escorted by someone.
The Waves program. You see, everyone who goes in is part of the White House access something restriction, whatever. Obama put that in place. Everyone who went through is known.
But I think it's interesting because.
Kamala.
Yeah.
Everyone who works on the White House campus has to get a drug test before they're ever eligible to work there. And you're subject to random screenings. I actually got one once after having kidney stones and then tested positive for the painkillers I had been on and had to get medical records. But
why were you going through that entrance? You know what? I think a lot of these people all know about this. They go through this entrance all the time to get their briefings. Not the, not press briefing, but actually from, senior staffers. Like, this is what you're going to say. And you'll tell us from sources close to the matter. people familiar with the president's thinking. Here's your coke. Go away.
Long story short, people in those positions cannot be doing drugs. Our adversaries could exploit it. It's not a small deal.
So
I don't
who
think
did it?
To
so
the
who did that's it? The thing. It's like cocaine gate. We don't know who did this. I'm thinking maybe it's a tourist, a stupid tourist, a guest, somebody like
yeah,
that.
Right. I like her. She doesn't have T's, this woman. Tourists, a guest.
What's her name?
Yes.
Mexican chick.
The lawyer. No,
supposedly a Republican.
No. This is
Anna,
the lawyer.
Anna, what's her name?
No, it's not Anna. This is the lawyer.
That's Anna.
No.
Cocaine gate. We don't know who did this. I'm thinking maybe it's a tourist.
Oh, you're right. It is Anna. Anna Navarro, who's on Ozempic.
We don't know who did this. I'm thinking maybe it's a tourist, a stupid tourist, a guest, somebody like that. And you've got to put your phone there. You've got to put your bags there. You got to put stuff there. And so somebody just, you know,
who brings their cocaine to the White House?
They left their stuff.
Notice the absence of the term baggy.
Lisa marks down everything you have to do to be in that part of the White House. I wonder why it seemed to be a blind spot for a security camera. We can't go to a Broadway show. We can't fly without taking our shoes off. You have this very private part of the White House, and they don't have cameras on the cubbyholes?
I'm surprised they don't have cameras, because they do have people there.
January 6th, when we talk about the security problems, they had the breaches, the warnings, and then you look at the classified documents. Again, people on both parties having them. There's some stuff that needs to be tightened up ASAP.
When your kids, you know those cubbies where you put shoes when your kids come in? That's what these cubbies look like, right? So they're tiny, these cubbies. So if you're taking your phone out of your pocket, not that I've brought anything into the White House that I wouldn't like seeing, but if you're taking your, and you put it in the cubby, and there's no way that's...
And you're saying they know it's cubby 50. If they have a video, whoever's in cubby
50, they don't have a video.
They have, it's a blind spot of the camera.
I bet you don't have them
now.
But
if they know the cubby and there were cameras on there, you'd know who was in that lot.
On the Hunter Biden of it, because of course it became memes and everyone's like, of course it's Hunter's. I don't think there's any evidence the Biden family wasn't there. I think it's a bigger deal if it's a White House staffer, though. They're the ones who are forbidden. You're subject to random drug screenings, insecurity clearances. You're not even eligible for a top secret clearance if you've done drugs in the last 10 years.
Well, they know a lot about it, but they don't use the term baggy.
Yeah. I'm now thinking, when I listen to this clip in particular, says that's a real conduit for disinformation, that show.
I'll say.
I am pretty sure, first I was like, Hunter, obviously it's Hunter, but they kept moving the baggy from the library to the east wing, or to the west wing, library, which is, okay, start from the east wing, went to the west wing, then went to this entrance, and then all of a sudden it's where Harris parks her car and where Harris goes in and out every day. They brought that up in that clip. They're trying to this was planted. This was done to besmirch Harris because they don't want her even thinking about running for president. This is going to happen. We're going to see more and more besmirching of her. I think that read of her saying the lower population probably read that on the right off the prompter. She didn't misread pollution. It was written population. This
yes,
whole
you're
thing
right. is to discredit her as a moron cokehead.
Yep.
I'm with you. That'll be used later. Yeah, you're right. And
we'll see more of this, in other words.
I think so. I think we will. There's only one news report that mentioned it, that this is, and that was the ladies. Ladies of the U who have mentioned that's where the vice president.
I did get a note from one of our producers saying, from I think he works there somewhere. He says that the rumor is it's her coke. I'm not thinking that rumor is part of the system to rumor her out. They're not going to take any chances with this woman. Mm-hmm. They're afraid of her.
Please notice, our producer said the room int, RUMINT, which is rumor intel.
Yeah, rumor intel.
And of course, which is made up as far as I can tell. But that's someone who's in the know.
Yeah, I agree. And it probably is, the room int is probably saying it's her, but that doesn't mean it's not her and she's not being set up. We always have to be aware of this
setup,
of the misdirection. And I think that's what we're dealing with.
I think you're right.
So she's a target. She's out. Gavin's got to be cut off at the knees too. He's no good. They're not going to let him get in. It's RFK Jr. You watch. You heard it here first.
Yes.
He is the nominee.
Yes. And then it's amazing what he's saying and what he's getting away with. Now, we had a rare chat about this after the show. because I want to make sure everyone knows that it's your idea, that RFK, Bobby the K, is an op. And I'll paraphrase your theory, which I like. The CIA is preparing to put him in, and it's a make good. And the make good goes like this: hey, man, we're sorry about your dad. Sorry about your uncle. That really sucked. I know. We're going to make good. We're going to let you be president. First thing you got to do is you got to stop this annoying big pharma. Our job to kill people, not theirs. So you're going to get rid of them. There's a couple of deep state people we want out. We're going to straighten some stuff out, but you'll be our boy. Did I paraphrase that correctly?
This is part of it. Yeah, I think that summarizes things. They need to get back on track, and the pharma thing is out of control. They got to pull that advertising thing. Kennedy's all in on that.
And they've got the military industrial complex is also a pain in their ass. And I think this latest released video from Bobby the K, which the New York Post titled as RFK Jr. says COVID may have been ethnically targeted to spare Jews, which is not at all what he said.
What?
But so this was a very noisy clip. I pulled it through the Adobe AI.
He's a miracle worker.
Now, it didn't do that great of a job. Interestingly, it straightened out his speech. See what you think.
That's interesting.
If you don't think it's any good, I'll stop it because it's still pretty noisy, but it straightened out his speech to a certain degree.
And we need to talk about bioweapons. I know a lot now about bioweapons because I've been doing
it. Yeah, you can't hear that at all, can you?
It's terrible. What, and the Adobe didn't get that noise out of there?
Right, let me see if it got better here. Hold on.
Look, I'm in the past 2.5 years, and
no, it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
You know, I'll bet you his speech is the problem. Adobe looks tries to find the vocal
within the noise, and
he speaks with noise built into his voice.
I think the problem is, well, there's one thing I could try. Hold on a second. I think the problem is because I'm pulling it through my compressor. Let me see if I turn the compressor off. Let me see what happens. Hold on a second. Compressor off. Let's see.
And we need to talk about bioweapons. I know a lot now about bioweapons because I've been doing a book on it for the past.
No, it doesn't work at all.
He's talking about bioweapons.
Yeah.
Which the CIA is all jacked up about.
Yeah, what he's saying is there's evidence from research that the AC2 receptors responded to white people and black people, but spared Asians and Ashkenazi Jews. And he says everyone is making China. He says we're the U.S. We're making genetically targeted bioweapons. That's what he said. He didn't say ethnically targeted to spare Jews, which is funny, but he didn't say that. So your theory is I like it, and it's interesting because I'm listening to we got MAGA everywhere here. This is MAGA country. What are you drinking?
I'm not going to get this anymore. This is Bublé.
Michael Bublé.
Yeah, that's what you'd think, but it's Bubly. It's bubbly with one.
But he promotes that. He promotes that stuff. He does ads.
Well, here's why I'm not buying it anymore. It says unfiltered sparkling water with electrolytes.
It does have aspartame as well.
No, just electrolytes. It's got, now check it out, it's calcium chloride and potassium chloride, which are two salts.
Mm-hmm.
And potassium chloride is something that some people have issues with. And it supposedly adds some taste, but I'd rather buy mineral water, which is natural, or just plain seltzer. I don't want electrolytes in my drink.
No, I agree. It's no good. Where was I? Oh, Bobby the K. So here in MAGA country, we talk to people, and people are, DeSantis is out. There's no
quick question.
Yes.
So So I go to Costco. I go to especially some place like Monterey Foods or some crunchy places. And it, like Monterey Foods, maybe 30% people are still wearing masks. Costco, at least 1 in 10. Yeah. Like, are they going to go the rest of their lives wearing these stupid masks?
I guess. I mean, it.
What do you got there? You got anybody wearing these masks at the Costco?
No. We don't have Costco here. We have HEB. If you see anything, sometimes a Mexican person, you might see them with a mask.
They're going to rob the place.
Wow. Wow.
I'm sorry. Wow. That's the first thing that comes to mind. It's a good gag. No, set me up with it.
They're casing the joint. No, we love our Mexicans here. So no, but this is MAGA country. This is, what do you call it? Moms for Liberty country. This is people who don't mess around. They love Trump. Trump's getting a raw deal. Now, DeSantis, no good. It was a little bit of DeSantis for a moment there that went away. You bring up Bobby Dekay and they are taking note, but right now the only thing, there's two pushbacks. One is he wants to jail all people who are anti-climate change. But that's kind of been debunked now.
It's debunkable. All the stuff is going to come out. It's going to be misinformation, misdirection, yeah, yeah, that can be debunked. Here's an interesting one.
You want me to?
If you don't mind, my kind of interrupting.
Interject.
I'm at dinner and I've got
by yourself.
Jay and Brennan are seated. Mm-hmm. And I bring up, they're all in on all the Democrat stuff. It's unbelievable.
Especially since they came from your loins.
And all the trans stuff, they're all in on.
No, no, disown them.
So just material here, you nuts.
You're right.
And so I bring up the Bobby Kennedy, and I said, and they go, "Oh, you know, guys, a crackpot." The whole thing, just all the stuff that you're supposed to say.
Yeah.
And I said,
vax denier.
And they're gonna go. No, they don't say that, but they say besides that, Trump's gonna get the nomination.
Oh, they think he's a Republican.
I said, what? I said, you think he's a Republican? RFK? Yeah, they're both in agreement. Yeah, oh yeah.
Wow.
And then I said, are you two nuts? He's a Kennedy, for one thing. He's a Democrat. He's been born and raised a day. He's part of the Democrat monarchy. Are you kidding me?
He's Democrat royalty.
Yeah, and so they both pull out their phones. Both of them at the same time. They got their phones out, and now they're looking it up.
Google.
Almost simultaneously, their jaws dropped.
No way.
He is a Democrat.
Wow. Wow. That's a great story. Wow.
It was like, holy mackerel, this is an interesting op.
This is a great op. Hmm. Well, so that's working very well.
Yeah, it's working great. Who's ever running this one?
Well, buddy. I'll tell you this.
Or gal.
If Trump becomes president again, Bobby Dekay for attorney general.
Ah, well, yeah, that'd be funny.
But that would not be the op would be to have the Republicans vote for him.
Well, that's what the op is to get the Republicans who like Trump, your Fredericksburg people, to take at least a look at Kennedy. And then as time goes by, it's going to be the way it works is that you very slowly when the mainstream turns the other way, which they will.
Well, hold on. So here's the news. DeSantis, we're now having Ken Griffin. He's the billionaire, one of the backers. He is, quote, reconsidering his support for DeSantis. Murdoch is now on record as saying, yeah, Ronnie's not doing so well out in the field. These guys, if they start backing Bobby Dekay, op is on.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, it would only take a small percentage of the MAGA people to turn and go to Bobby Dekay. But anyway, the other objection, this, and if I were advising Kennedy, he'd have to work on this. The only other objection I hear is, Kennedy, he's a globalist.
Yes, this comes up in the conversation. And I think he might be.
Yeah, of course he is. Hello. There's all kinds of problematic stuff with him. Absolutely. And I said problematic.
It's okay. That word doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you. It's a good filler.
I just want to do two quick boots on the ground reports. We have a full-time driver for UPS, anonymous, of course. Been with the company for 5 years. Now, UPS, I think they deliver something like 15% of our entire GDP. UPS is a big deal if they go on strike, and we've been talking about this. But the news has dropped it because, you know, Coke baggy. Yesterday, Friday, our part-time supervisors on any shift and full-time supervisors were told to get Department of Transportation cards. Any supervisor, full or part-time, that hasn't driven before is getting orders to go to driving school. They are planning, says, the rumor are, if part and full-time union employees strike, the pilots and feeder drivers are striking too. Fantasies of strike are becoming a reality. There's a lot more to this note, but I did just want to point out that it seems like that could actually happen. That could cripple a lot.
Well, that may be necessary to make sure Biden doesn't run again. It may actually be a necessary evil that we're all going to have to suffer through.
Good one. Yeah, good one. And then something that, you know, I've been...
Because there has been talk, I should mention, there has been talk, positive talk about, the inflation rate is down to 3%, which, of course, is on top of everything else.
Yeah,
3%,
right.
And, you know, one guy literally said on one of the, I think it was on a PBS or an NPR show, he said, that is ruining the Republicans' talking points, this inflation thing. So... They're going to have to do something.
The fact that people are so broke they can't even donate to the show tells me inflation is real and is a real problem with the economy. But yeah, if the media goes away, if the media, you know, decides to pull the rug on that, everything's great, because they'll make it real, they'll make it truth. Then, it's interesting. Meanwhile, if you're in the United States of America, may I humbly submit that you take a look at your school board, your city council, and focus on that, because the president of the United States is not emperor, is not king, and doesn't control everything. That's the real psyop here. Your local government, your governor, these are the things that are important, not the president, which are just being psyoped into talking about for the next year and a half. Ugh. Tired of it.
And I have a heat report.
Heat report. All right. Let me see. Where's your heat report? Oh, you have quite the report, actually. You want to do all this?
Yeah, they're short, though. Short.
All right. Cool. All right. What's the heat report NPR? Here we go.
Temperatures in parts of the Southwest are expected to top 120 degrees Fahrenheit this weekend. There's even a chance, if forecasts are accurate, that Death Valley, which currently holds the record for the hottest air temperature ever recorded on the planet Earth at 134 degrees, could see that record matched or broken.
Wow. I mean, just how dangerous is this?
Wow.
It's extremely dangerous, you know, for people and wildlife. A study published last week estimates that more than 61,000 people died during heat waves in Europe last year. And we're looking at similar temperatures there right now. In the U.S., you know, public health officials are warning people to limit activity outdoors and to check up on neighbors, especially elderly people, folks with pre-existing conditions, and people that live in low-income areas who might not have access to AC or to even shade. Here's the director of California's Department of Public Health, Dr. Tomas Aragon, at a press briefing yesterday.
The symptoms that we become more concerned about is when your internal core temperature starts becoming elevated. So you may develop a fever. It could be impacting any organ, but the organ that we become most concerned about is when it starts impacting your brain.
Oh, my goodness. They're so happy in Holland. The kids are back. It's beautiful here. Nothing like Texas, but it's nice. Yeah, you know, they got 85, 90 degrees. Well, they're alive. Their brain has not been affected yet.
Well, they haven't been listening to NPR enough.
Well, no, of course not. I shield them from that. Unlike whatever you did to your kids, you let it seep in.
Peer groups. I can't do anything about it. Here we go with heat report 2.
So that's when a person's judgment could be compromised. So they might not even recognize that they're in a dangerous situation.
I'm confused.
Take the steps they need to cool down. I should add here too, Scott, that public health officials warn this applies to everyone. You know, California looked at deaths associated with a heat wave in the state last year and found that many of the people who died were younger Latinos who were working outdoors or even physically fit people who just did their regular exercise routines, like going for hikes or runs.
Do they warn anyone in California, but with this type of heat, that you probably shouldn't wear a mask outside because that could impair your breathing?
That has never cropped up in the conversation.
I think it's an important point. People should know this.
I'm not going to argue. I think you're right. Let's go with heat report 3.
So average temperatures on the planet have already increased nearly 2 degrees Fahrenheit since the start of the Industrial Revolution, which is when we really started adding CO2 into the atmosphere.
Oh, yeah.
And when average temperatures go up, the highs become higher, as we're seeing right now. The last 8 years were the hottest years on record for the planet.
Always.
This is pissing me off.
How much can you get over and over? They keep hounding us with this information. Let's go to part 4.
Preliminary data shows that the first week of this month of July was the hottest the world has seen in thousands, if not tens of thousands of years.
Wow.
And all of these superlatives that we're talking about, Scott, these records are expected to continue to be broken as we continue to release more fossil fuel emissions into the atmosphere.
That's NPR's Nate Rott. Thanks.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I got
it. I do have a kicker.
Oh, brother. You're going to kick me in the ass with this stuff.
By the way, 10,000 years, hottest ever. Cal heat wave kicker.
Much of the San Francisco Bay Area is under an excessive heat warning this weekend. Temperatures in some cities are forecast to reach 106 degrees. From member station KQED, Azul Dahlstrom-Ekman has more.
County officials throughout the Bay Area are opening cooling centers and directing people to limit outdoor activities. Dial Hong is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. He says while many are accustomed to the heat, it's important to look out for the most vulnerable in these situations.
And to check on the elderly, the young, the sick, and anyone else who might
have an elevated
risk of heat-related illness.
The region is expected to see cooling by Wednesday. The heat wave is affecting much of California. Luckily, the state's power grid says it has adequate reserves to keep the power on.
When did we ever have a power reserve report? The last time that was when Gray Davis was the governor.
I'm not going to let you get away with this, Dvorak, because if you're going to do this, I have to play my 3 clips, my heat-related clips. And these are all of John Kerry, Watermelon Head himself, our climate czar. Former presidential candidate, former senator. Is he still a senator? No, he's not.
He's nothing now. He's the climate czar.
Yeah. Being ripped a new orifice by Scott Perry, Representative Scott Perry. Then it was just enjoyable to see this douche knuckle squirm. Let's start off with. Let me see. What is number one here? The clip number one is concerning the amount of CO2.
Secretary, in 2015 at the Paris Climate Conference, you said that if all industrial nations go to zero emissions, it wouldn't be enough. And then at the White House's Climate Day in January of 21, you said almost 90% of the planet's emissions come from outside the U.S. We could go to zero tomorrow and the problem isn't solved. And in April 21, you told the Washington Post that even the U.S. and China going to zero emissions tomorrow won't solve the climate's problem. Then in April of 21, you said that global net zero is not enough and that CO2 must be removed from the atmosphere. How much is the correct amount of CO2?
Let me explain to you if I can so you understand exactly what I said. It's close, but it's not quite exactly what I was saying.
Can you
Here's how it works. Because we have put, I'd forget the exact number of tons, millions of tons of CO2 and other greenhouse gases are now in the atmosphere. They're there. And every day we're adding more. And so every day the heat is going up and we have to figure out how we're going to, tame the monster here. The only way to do that is to reduce emissions on an ongoing basis, to get control on the current level of emissions that we have created.
But what
then,
is
then but to what actually is
the correct,
suck?
Sir, with all due respect, you've been through this before. What is the correct amount? I don't want to spend a bunch of time about a history lesson about things that people don't care about.
Of course, he had no correct amount. I love this one. What is the correct temperature for the Earth? What is the correct amount of CO2? There's no answer from these douches. Let's blame it on the humans, though.
What changes every day? I can't tell exactly
correct
what
amount
it is.
Changes. It's in the,
yes, so, it does.
So, Secretary, you probably know that for approximately 200 million years, what's the parts per million now? About 400, right? Can we
it's
agree
over
on that?
400.
All right.
It's about
200 million years. 2,000 parts per million. Did Mother Nature get it wrong for 200 million years?
Here's the difference, Congressman. The difference is, yes, there were periods which all the scientists who deal with climate acknowledge that there have been moments on the planet, which is billions of years old, in which there were greater heat and there was greater.
Tell me the difference quickly. I've got a
the
little
difference is time. Human beings are created.
Okay, so
that's the difference.
So human beings are 1,000 years old, but during these periods of time where it was 2,000 parts per million, life existed. As a matter of fact,
not human beings walking around.
We're in one of the lowest periods of carbon in the atmosphere in not only recorded history, in the history of life existing on the planet. In December of 2022, you told the Washington Post we need to remove 1.6 trillion tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere via direct air capture. The cost for that is about $1,000 per ton or $1.6 quadrillion. Now, you said you didn't know, but since 2015, since the last El Nino, about 500 billion tons have been emitted into the atmosphere. During that same period of time, 2015, if you look at the temperature graph, this is from NOAA. The temperature has gone down. Show the next slide. This is from NASA satellite data. Temperature has gone down.
So he's just going to hound him on the $1.6 quadrillion.
You want to have the American taxpayers, my constituents that are having a hard time afford their groceries, pay for a car, buy a new home, spend $1.6 quadrillion to fix a problem that A, doesn't exist, and as a matter of fact, you might be exacerbating because it's unknown. It is unknown at this time the low level that of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that might actually destroy life, because plant life all depends, as you know, Secretary, plant life all depends on CO2. And when we kill it, then we're done, too. I yield the balance.
Congressman, let me just say that I don't agree with what you're saying out there for any number of reasons. I don't have time to go into all of that, but I'll just tell you point blank that the difference between the periods you're looking at in terms of heat, et cetera, and human input is night and day, number one.
Oh,
number
yeah.
two, why do you think 195 countries in the world, their prime ministers, their presidents...
Because they're grifting like you are, sir.
Yeah!
That's a pretty shocking statement that you believe that
who
all
is
the scientists
guy?
In the world...
This is Representative Scott Perry. Let's hear that one again.
Because they're prime ministers, they're presidents.
Because they're grifting like you are, sir.
Ooh,
this,
ooh.
That's pretty
ooh,
shocking.
Fight the words.
That you believe that all the scientists in the world are grifting.
All of them. Not all scientists agree with you, Mr. Sir.
98% of all the scientists. In the world.
Science isn't about agreement. It's not about consensus. You know that.
Chair now recognizes Ms. Cheerfulness McCormick.
Well, that was an excellent clip.
That was a good guy, right? I like
yeah,
that.
We have to follow him.
Yes.
Get on his mailing list.
He's a grifter, like all of them. Exactly.
That's the only explanation I can come up with.
It's all a big grift. Don't fall for it, people. But don't wear a mask outside either in the summer. End of show mixes. We have the fabulous Sir Chris Wilson and Sir Seat Sitter. Actually, it was Sir Chris Wilson who did the Google song. It's Sir Seat Sitter does the QAnon Man. Both classic.
Oh, QAnon Man's a great song.
Yeah, both classic end of show mixes. We appreciate them. And coming up next, Bowls with Buds, Sir Spencer, Dame Delurian, and Cold Acid as guests. Make sure you check that out. Listen to it on noagendastream.com, trollroom.io. And we will return on Thursday with another lengthy deconstruction of your mainstream media, who, by the way, are idiots. Coming to you from the heart of the Texas Hill Country here in FEMA Region Number 6 in the morning, everybody. I'm Adam Curry.
And from Northern Silicon Valley, where at least it's not hot. It's actually quite temperate. It's perfect around at least where I am. I'm John C. Dvorak.
We return on Thursday. Remember us at Dvorak.org/NA. Send us some value back, everybody. Till then, adios, mofos. A hooey hooey and such.
There wasn't a lot of surprises, Melissa, but I just want to put something in perspective. Is the world cannot live without Google. We can live without Facebook, but Google is part of the fabric, the oxygen of the internet.
This is, I'm sure it is. It's completely disturbing. We can't easily live without Google.
No, I can't forget this evening when I spent my time just being and all my wasted life on DuckDuckGo. I shunned YouTube and watched my stuff on Vimeo. Well, if Facebook sank tomorrow, you know I'd feel a little sorrow, but we'd all be better off if it would go. And now it's only fair that I should let you know. I can't live without Google. I can't being anymore. I can't live.
By the way, does work. You don't need Google necessarily. The one you can't live without, and I've written about this too, is Amazon.
It's the 9th of December, 2019. The IG report drops any minute. There's so much excitement. Unseal the indictments. Can't wait to see Hillary in prison. Suddenly, and I scroll through to see what it shows. It says Russia Gate was all A-OK, and I'm left here sucking a joke. Bill Barr, 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 Barr. Bill Barr, the retard. Yum, yum. String us along, Mr. QAnon man. String us along forever. String us along for eternity, so we never rise up all together. John Brennan may be above the law, and Clapper may always run free, but we still might get McCabe, and we'll all be good slaves, because QAnon will always be. Bears and tell us it's all okay, just shut up and trust the plan. One day the whole swamp will be drained. QAnon man, QAnon, non, 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 non. Don't rise up, just get strung along.
us along, Mr. QAnon man. Just tell us to all trust the plan. Because otherwise we might all resist and take things into our own hands.
Dvorak.org/NA.
I think they're fantastic.